Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights at the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights at the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give them rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off the bad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I am Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
He deserves the turbo. All rise for King deserves the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
Something happening here, what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
Yeah, hello everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table, I think. So, yeah, I believe it is possible to have entirely too much fun on your birthday. So, the day after, the hair of the dog that bit you or something like that is what they said. woohoo! Today's show might go in circles or something. It might go a little bit sideways. Who knows? Anyway, Barbara, are you there? Hello.
I'm here.
I think I'm alive. I think I'm here, but I don't know. Anyway, we had some...
I think I'm here, too. I don't know. Sometimes I question that, but... I hope we're all here.
I think that I've just been sitting here contemplating right before the deal, because you was telling me about some new technologies I got out there, one of which I hope they don't use today, because it's like I don't want nobody yelling right now for obvious reasons. But anyway, it's just like this world that we live in is just kind of, I don't know, it's gone bizarre. Everything's like spy versus spy. It's, I don't know if you've ever seen that little cartoon where, you know what I'm talking about? The little spy versus spy cartoon. We're always trying to get each other through the whole deal.
Well, I don't watch the cartoons, but I think I get what you're talking about.
Well, anyway, it's like they got all kinds of creative ways to figure out how to constantly surveil people. You know, track you on the internet. It's almost worse than the Truman Show. You know, where the guy was raised up in the place where he thought he was in his own world, and he was in the real world. But in reality, everyone around him was an actor, and he was like in this. It was a movie all the time, a show that people were watching on TV of his life. Isn't that?
Yeah. Well, I sometimes feel like I'm on TV. Or yeah. In a movie. I mean, you know, sometimes things are looking like, wow, I feel like I'm in a movie, or I feel like I'm in some kind of a novel or a B movie, you know, the B grade movie that you don't, you know, that only play in certain types of houses, movie theaters that you don't want to go to, but they're on that level called the B movies.
Yeah.
You know?
Listen, maybe like that doggone show with the hidden cameras, you know, it's like this has got to be a joke, because most of this stuff just sounds so ridiculous, it just don't sound like it's even plausible that, you know, it's...
Hello, do you remember the TV show called This Is Your Life? you remember that?
I think I do remember something like that, but I don't... Just don't ring a bell. It must be that...
Well, it's sort of like, so somebody's... I guess they're cold. They're kind of like invited on to this show. They don't know what for. It's sort of going to be a surprise, and it's going to be a surprise for them. But the whole title of the show is "This Is Your Life," and will they pull out as a surprise? Surprise! they go to all ends of the earth and call on and drag out people from your past who you haven't seen in 30, 40, 50 years, who probably you don't ever want to see again, but they pull them out on TV and they come forward and everybody's crying and hugging and talking about that time and the way back in the past and that this is your life, you know what I mean? So they lay out this person's life through bringing out all kinds of people that, like I said, they haven't seen in I don't know how long. So they're dragging them back in time, and they're talking about things in the past and what their life was like, and they drag up relatives they haven't seen or probably disconnected from for various reasons. And, yeah, and this is your life. I mean, and the audience, lots of people in the audience, and, you know, I mean, it was bizarre.
That sounds crazy and dangerous at the same time. Like, somebody like, hey, you remember that $5 you never paid me back, and they start fighting and all that?
Oh, well, it got sometimes, remember you said this, and I said that, and then we didn't speak to each other for 50 years, and well, here we are, let's hug and make up, and let's do this, you know, let's whatever. I mean, it's sort of like they're forced into this this game of staging a person's life for an audience. I don't know. Well, we went into the, you know, the whole thing. Remember, you came up with all the world, the stage.
Yeah.
You know, and we've heard that statement, all the world's a stage, and we looked it up, and I didn't know William, that was part of one of William Shakespeare's plays, right? Yeah, I mean, William Shakespeare, how long ago did he live, and his plays were on it, weren't they, though?
Yeah, it's like, it's amazing, but sometimes you feel like this world is a stage, you never, especially in the political world, I mean, you know that people are out there manipulating behind the scenes, people's mindset, and basically playing people like a banjo, you know, getting everybody riled up or something like that, or, you know, the faking of the newscast on TV to try to get you towards their agenda. I wonder how many actual wars out there were because somebody showed a fake news broadcast or doggone... some sort of propaganda film or whatever. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I want to read something to you that I wrote the other day on Facebook, talking about, actually, so I wrote, "Dear everyone, no matter your political affiliation, it is becoming apparent to me that we the people, if we are not careful, if we are not alert and aware of the rising hatred and divisiveness being pushed upon us by our political leaders who seek to win at all costs, that we may very well find ourselves pushed into a level of violence upon our neighbors in our cities and towns. And this would divide us as a nation like we have not seen since the revolution. And now more than ever, we hear from both sides of the aisle that we, the people, must join them and win, no matter the cost, no matter if all civility is ignored. As a matter of fact, it appears that our political leaders are actually asking us to ignore civility and to become so enraged, so hateful of the other that we are left with no other recourse but to attack with unbridled force those who they deem are our enemies." And then I wrote, what is civility? Civility is consideration, respect, courtesy. Civility in Latin means citizen. Civility is caused by a person's emotions or lack thereof. In other words, if a person is emotionally affected by negative feedback in a psychologically normal manner, then they are defined as civil. But today it appears that feelings, emotions outweigh rational arguments and civility toward each other. I hope and pray that we can treat each other with respect and to not allow ourselves to be pushed into violence toward each other, that through these coming months that we will stand in our truth without hatred and also refuse to answer the call to violence, and I pray that we do not lose sight of our connection as humans who ultimately desire peace and harmony for all. So that's what I wrote. Now, I didn't know that civility was a Latin word and it meant citizen. Did you?
No, but as he was reading it, I'm thinking about some of these doggone supposed senators and congresswomen and men up there talking about going out and getting in people's faces, and I'm like, what? You know, this isn't cool, because if they actually do go out and get in people's faces, folks will only be pushed so far before they start fighting back.
I think I just saw a video or a little bit of a news feed somewhere in California. I didn't go into it, but somewhere in California, I saw the video. I couldn't even watch it. People were kicking and stomping on some guy.
Jeez.
You know, like a gang. But they weren't a gang people. They were your neighbors that were arguing about politics. And they were out there protesting. Okay, so you had two... Here we go. You have two factions, two sides, who have two different beliefs, and they're out there protesting, and things got pretty violent, and they were beating up, stomping on, kicking a guy that was down. And I mean, this is, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, wow, where is this? And I look, it's California. I was like, wow. And this is alarming to me. And you're right, there are certain politicians. I mean, Waters is one, and then I guess it's Cory Booker recently said something. I can't quote it because it's inciting us people to go out there and be violent against other people for that politician.
Yeah, and even Hillary Clinton was saying that we can't be civil until we have power back. I mean, doesn't she realize what she just said?
That no, that's what I'm talking about. Well, I think she does realize it, you see. I think they definitely realize it, but the people who are listening to them don't realize it. But they're being incited, and this is what's concerning to me, and this is why I keep saying, where are we heading? Because they're pushing, those politicians who want to win, no matter what, are pushing your average people to do their bidding.
That's it right there. If they don't get their way, and they don't get their self back in power, they're getting all the crazy people to try to harass everybody. So they're basically using the people against the people, you know?
Well, it's like the emotional... See, talking about civility, if you react to something negative, and, you know, it's a psychological warfare we're dealing with here, and we have a lot of... Now, I'm not saying, okay, so I'm going to use the words here. We have a lot of disturbed people in our world. Now, where we get disturbed and upset over what we're being shown is going on, we do get disturbed, we do get upset, we get angry, and
well,
we get
rightfully so, whenever you're being constantly told from all different directions that this person hates you, or that person's dangerous, or this is going on. So your average Joe looking out the world, it looks so incredibly chaotic. How are they supposed to not get freaked out or something like, you
know? Well, that's the whole idea, is the push to get people... It's sort of like, let's tweak or let's fire up the people out there who have endured and lived with, you know, trying to survive, suffering in so many ways, feeling something is not right and it's very wrong, and seeing things that are wrong and seeing things that are way out of balance. And so you're building this system of the human, you know, psychological aspects of a human who, when I say, you know, we're disturbed, I don't mean, well, I could have to use that. Well, we are being disturbed deliberately, and they're adding to this sense of helpless, hopelessness, and rage, and they're using that psychological warfare against us to do their bidding. This is so dangerous, and this is escalating, and people are enraged, and people are despairing, and then when you have a
I think there's one other thing to add to that. Have you ever watched the old show Jerry Springer?
You know, I don't watch that kind of stuff, but one time I tuned in because everybody's talking about Jerry Springer. I said, what is this? All right, I was appalled. I couldn't even continue watching this show.
Well, I'm thinking it's basically almost like a psychological operation to get people used and accustomed to laughing at things that otherwise wouldn't be considered to be funny. If you understand what I'm saying? I mean, it's like...
I do. Well, that's, you know, we know, how long have we known that the media is a brainwashing tool and uses psychological warfare against the people who basically, that's where they go to for entertainment or to live their life vicariously through these shows. You know, why do we say, when we see something, we say, I mean, I do, I say, well, get a life, you know, these people need to get a life. Like, I'm talking about a part of the population, but I'm not saying people, I'm saying it's across the board, that it's a challenge for us to not be led as a wolf pack because we are feeling frustrated and angry. Then you have different levels where people are dipping into levels of rage, and then they're acting upon this. It's sort of like we have to be very careful not to be led. It's a political ploy. It's dirty politics, and the dirty politics are now at a level where Hillary Clinton, says there's no room for civility.
Yeah.
Until we are back in power.
A lot of times on that Jerry Springer show, you hear a bunch of people like laughing at somebody's plight that's going on out there, but they encourage that on that show because, you know, when there's this drama going on, next thing you know, everybody in the crowd thinks it's like funny. And so, you know, it's like almost a crowd mentality takes over, and these guys are laughing because these other people on the stage acting ridiculous, you know, and all this kind of stuff. You see what I'm saying here?
I do. And sometimes, so I think it's, I think it's becoming increasingly difficult, or let me say people are being blocked from from their compassion.
Yeah.
Compassion for another person. I think people are deliberately being blocked to experience that. Instead, they're being guided to basically not care if someone's hurting, to not care if they've violated verbally or emotionally a person. That's funny now. That's like, let's laugh at that person because they're crying or they're devastated. Let's give it more to them. Let's stick them with the, you know, stick them with the swords now. Let's burn them at the stake.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of hypocrisy going on because on one hand, the government's trying to charge everyone with hate crimes, but on the other hand, the mainstream media promotes, you know, talking.
Well, the politics are promoting.
Yeah,
hate.
Even the politicians.
I'm saying this is across the board: the mainstream media, the politicians, the Jerry Springer shows. I just said a word, though. I just said this little sentence about let's burn them at the stake, and I saw this documentary called The Burning Times.
Yeah.
Drawn from, I guess, a group of women in Canada made this documentary, and they did studies for many years, and they got real, you know, factual documents about the Vatican's keeping notes, right? They wrote everything down, keeping notes on the Inquisition. So they got a hold of this information, and they based their documentary on this information, with drawings of torture machines and burning people and the whole story about the witch trials, okay? Now, it was a lot, of course, 9 million women. I mean, it's shocking, but there were also Jews and gays and gypsies involved. They were taken in, and you know, through this Inquisition, and their lives were destroyed. Many of them were burned at the stake, but I'm thinking of all the people who went to view this burning of a human being and cheered. The same thing with hanging black people in the South, the hangings. It was like people would bring picnics.
Terrible.
Picnics. This was an outing to watch another human being to be tarred and feathered and strung up and hung. This was a party. This was a picnic. Have we moved much further from this? And are we heading back to that? Where you're going to see... I just saw it on that video, and there's many other news, you know, about people beating people up because they have a political preference, or they... This is where we are today, and to me, we're being led, and we've always been led, and people just acquiesce to it, and they go to the picnic and have a picnic. They bring their kids while some human being is being tarred and feathered and beaten up and bloodied and hung. This is a horrible thing. So now we have people in the streets protesting Trump or protesting this political thing or that political thing or Muslims entering or, you know, I mean, we're talking across the board here where people's rage and acts are uncivil and ramping up big time. So this is a very concerning moment in our time, and it's very disturbing to me because we're not much better than those people who packed a picnic lunch and went out there and cheered. Well, you know, cheered for someone being murdered and violated because somebody said you.
Well, it blows my doors off because I keep thinking back about how Hillary Clinton was sitting there wringing her hands with glee.
That is the one that just tipped me over.
Talked about how we came, we saw, and he's dead or something like that. I'm like, man, how evil is that
woman?
Well,
she had such glee on her face. Yeah. It was a moment of truth and reality about the level of a politician, of a woman, and she's not the only one. She just let it out. She just let it rip in that moment because she was so overjoyed about this murder of this man. Look, I'm not saying that a person should not be punished for the bad things they do. They need the due process. We are supposedly civil, lawful human beings, but when you have that kind of I am not joyous when I see even a person who has done something bad.
Yeah, I even feel bad for the bad guys, you know. It's like, sure, they got caught, they done wrong, they got to do their time or whatever, but, you know, to take any kind of pleasure in it, that just seems wrong to me.
I think it's evil. I mean, there's no compassion there. There's nothing. There's no moral, no compassion. But here's the other point, you know, like, I don't know how you feel about executing a human being who murdered someone or executing a human being for, I don't know, whatever they come up with. Okay, you did this, now we're going to execute you, we're going to put you on death row. And you're going to hang out there for 15, 20 years, whatever, before we decide that you're going to be electrocuted or lethally injected. Or I have a real problem with humanity's perspective of it is our right to take another life. So this man murdered someone, or a person murdered someone, and that's bad. That's a bad thing. But let's go murder that person, and that's a good thing. I don't know.
Well, I think that's one of the things that really disturbed me the most about seeing the scenario of that show Jericho play out. It was how the average Joe acted under certain circumstances. You know, whenever their life was on the line, or
they could stoop to what we are capable of stooping to. And this is the thing that I'm just looking at, what I see people today in our time today I guess I'd say, well, nothing's really changed. I mean, and now they're using psychological warfare on pushing people to do harm and violence against others across the board, you know.
Yeah.
And that's deeply concerning to me. And you know, the Me Too thing, the rape thing, the violence there against women, and then the turning point of where women are enraged and hating men, and all men are guilty if a woman accuses them. You have to believe the woman, because we have not been believed for so many years. We have duct tape on our mouth. Now we're setting ourselves free, and they're enraged to the point where no matter what the real story is, it does not matter. It's just the fact that a woman has accused someone, therefore we must now stand up for that woman and believe her. But now there's another side, because now you have women, really intelligent, good people, and I'm not saying they have to be intelligent, but so you have people who are saying, well, I know this person, and I've known them for 50-some years, and they're not that kind of a person. So that woman is speaking, she has a voice, but those women are not to be believed. It's the other woman who's the accuser that says she's been violated or raped or molested. That's the one the women are believing, not the other women, okay, who say, well, I know this person. And there are excuses made. Well, there are women who have been violated who basically, complain or have their boyfriend or husband arrested, and then they say, well, I'll take him back. He didn't really do it, or whatever it is. So there's such a crazy thing going on, and people are just lumping this circumstance all in one basket and say, no, it's all across the board that, you know, women get confused, and they may make a claim that someone violated them, but, that's not true, really, and they change their mind, but in fact he is a violator, and then there are some who stand up and said, no, I know him, he's not a violator. But I mean, it's so crazy what we're seeing happening today. And people, here's the other thing. So people are disowning people. The people are just deleting people, disowning people in their own families because of their preference or their beliefs in one thing or another. Yeah. There's no civility. Civility's out the window.
If you talk political or religion in the wrong circles, you'll be ostracized. it's the truth, though. But you know, it's just it's like the mental mind maze that you got to actually try to go through in today's world is just,
well,
it's beyond.
Aren't we supposed to be a country if you have a right, freedom of speech, right?
Basically.
Freedom of speech is out the window, because if your speech doesn't happen to sit with the rest of the crew, then you're pummeled or beaten up or ostracized or, I mean...
On one hand, they're sitting there telling the world to be civil and not to commit hate crimes, but on the other hand, they're promoting via the media and the entertainment industry everything from violence to, you know, it's like what Paul Harvey said back in 1965, threatening the world with dirtier movies and all that kind of stuff. But if you look out there, the music industry promotes violence. The doggone movies promote everything from witchcraft to you name it, whatever. Just crazy stuff. And the mainstream media sitting around talking about how you're supposed to be nice to people. You know, don't commit no hate crimes, or don't hate somebody because of their color. Yet, when I was talking earlier about there's the actual... video out there where there were people, soldiers in Iraq, that were actually shooting people down and laughing about it. I mean, they was having enjoyment, almost as if it's like, you know, a doggone video game. It's not real, you know. They're so desensitized that this becomes funny. The whole Jerry Springer effect, where you got crowds of people standing around and everybody's laughing because these two people are fighting with each other. And it's all promoted by the same exact system that sits there and tells you out of one side of their neck to be nice to each other, But then out the other side, their neck says, oh, but we're just joking. This is funny over here, you know. Look at that. The old slapstick comedy, you know, it ain't like that anymore. You know, like the Three Stooges hitting each other in the head with hammers and 2x4s and doing crazy stuff. It's not like that anymore. That's not the funny part anymore. You see what I'm trying to say here? It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm just looking at, you know, I love that introduction that Paul Harvey, you know.
Yeah.
And I just looking up his I'm just looking up some of his famous quotes I was looking for. That one isn't included. There's other stuff there, but I want to find some good stuff here, because I think that man was a prophet.
Well, he sure didn't call it the way it is today back then. I mean, that's more than a coincidence, because he laid it out like a roadmap.
Well, here's some... I don't know all of it. Here's something. He says, communism has defeated itself everywhere except in American colleges.
Well, I can believe that, because have you noticed that most of the riots going on are, you know, college-related?
Yeah.
It's like...
And here's... Yeah, I see that ramping up. So here's another one. If we cannot count on ourselves to do the right thing, how can we count on anyone or anything else? Self-government won't work without self-discipline.
Yeah, that's true.
And now, how far back, when was this most of his quotes? Because we're talking what period of time was this?
Well, I know I listened to him all the way through the 60s up into probably the 80s.
I did too. I used to listen to him on the radio.
My grandpa used to listen to him all the time.
Yeah, so he says it was self-serving politicians who convinced recent generations of Americans that we could all stand in a circle with our hands in each other's pockets and somehow get rich. Yeah. And in times like these, it helps to recall that there have always been times like these.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty interesting, because you almost explained that earlier when you was talking about things in history, you know, terrible
that's
atrocities
right.
through history, and that people were actually bringing picnics to, you know, a public slaughter, more or less. I just don't... You know, I don't think that mankind is inherently evil. I think that there's a good side on them and a potential bad side, but I think that this world tries to steer everyone towards anything that's going to not keep people together. Anything that's going to be controversial or something that's going to get you to look at somebody differently. You know, it's pretty bad whenever you got to say words like, you know, I got a black friend, or I got a yellow friend, or whatever, you know.
Exactly. Or some of my best friends are gay, or
yeah,
whatever.
You should.
Some of my best friends are black people.
You shouldn't have to say that. You shouldn't have to justify to basically, I'm not a racist person. I'm not a xenophobe or a homophobe. They throw these terms out at everybody.
That's where we are today. We've come to that, where we have to first make an excuse and make sure people aren't shocked or people don't attack us for being politically incorrect. You know, that's where we are today. We can't, you know, no free speech. There's just judgment, free judgment upon everyone, you know.
Yeah, so they're sitting here promoting this stuff and then turn around and trying to use this to demonize you as a person. It's basically like degrading you. If you don't agree with everything that is said, they use these words, these terminologies and labels to try to make you look bad. Call you these, you know, racist and stuff like that. I'm not racist. I don't hate people because of what color they are or anything like that. But when I have to say that I'm not racist, then their job was pretty much to make me apprehensive to say, you know, I'm not racist. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of, that's why I say it's a mad, mad world.
Yeah.
You know, Like, it's pretty crazy out there. So here's another one. He says, man, despite his artistic pretensions, his sophistication, and his many accomplishments, owes his existence to a 6-inch layer of topsoil and the fact that it rains.
Well, May just wrote a message in the chat room. I've never even heard of this before, but it blows my doors off. She said, when I worked at Honda Marysville plant, they taught 8-second rule in regard to sexual harassment. Only 8 seconds to look at someone in fixed stare must move gaze or of eyes in 8 seconds. So, like, somebody sees you staring at somebody, sometimes you get to go daydreaming and you're just staring off into space. You ain't even looking at the person. You're kind of looking through them into the next dimension or whatever. And you could be accused of that.
Well, I am very curious about people. I love people. I like to get to know people. So sometimes I might be staring at somebody who I find, wow, I'd like to, that person looks interesting, or I'd like to get to know that person. So I could be accused of harassment.
It's crazy because there's a thing out there that I don't know if a whole lot of people even realize. Somebody doesn't even have to be guilty of something. Just merely saying, you know, certain words about somebody's, sexual preference or whatever. All you have to do is say it. And then now, where it used to be innocent until proven guilty, now you're, if you want the world to look at you like you didn't do something, now you got to try to figure out a way to say, look, I didn't do that. And then you got to find a way to prove you're not that. But in the meantime, you still got that stigma. So somebody pointed you out and said, oh, look, he's a thief, you know. And now you find yourself walking around everywhere with your hands in the air and your pockets folded out so nobody believes that you're really a thief. You know, I ain't steal nothing. You see what I mean?
I saw this video of this, some kind of a little store. I don't know whether it was a grocery store or department store. And there was this woman leaning on the counter, a white woman leaning. Here we go with color. But this is what's happening. A woman was leaning on the counter. She had, she was looking over at something, I guess, and this, people were passing back and forth behind her, and this mother and her 9-year-old boy, who had a backpack on, passed by her. There were a lot of people there, so they were kind of squeezing through. Now, this little boy was a little black boy, family like that, and he had a backpack on, and the video shows that her backpack brushed against this white woman's butt. The video showed this, but before the video came out, she accused this boy of touching her behind.
Jeez.
A 9-year-old boy. I mean, he was standing there crying because he was minding his own business. So the video showed, came out later, because, you know, the stores have video cameras, right?
Yep.
Came out and showed that, no, the mother and the boy was following the mother, and people were passing on the other side, so they were kind of crowded. His backpack touched this woman who was leaning over the counter on her butt. And in the video, it shows she turned around and starts screaming at him, and everybody stops, and the whole thing went crazy, and she accused him of touching her behind, and she went ballistic, but the video came out and showed the truth.
Yep, and that, you know, on one hand, I'd say video is a plus, especially in today's day and age, but on
the
other hand,
the cameras are on everybody.
Yeah.
And sometimes
yeah.
it is a good thing, but here we are being spied on constantly.
But for that same reason is why I hate going to grocery stores or any shopping center these days, because they got all these cameras out here, and you feel like a suspect, even though you know you're not a thief.
Well, you feel guilty because you're being watched. It's sort of like a psychological thing again. You feel like, wait a second, I better keep my hands, like you say, in your pockets, or pull your pockets out, or don't, whatever it is.
Yeah.
This is creating this manic experience.
Yeah, and so whenever you go there, it's like, I actually, if I'm going to reach in my pocket to get anything, I'll aim it right towards the camera, I'll pull my phone
out.
This
is crazy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's so crazy. Some guy, a video came out after this incident, I remember this a couple of years ago, some fella, again, it was a black person, and I have to keep saying this, Unfortunately, there was a young black man in the aisle where the BB guns were, or the guns, or the knives, whatever it was. And he pulled off one of the guns, and he was looking at it. Now, some woman went ballistic and started screaming for the bodyguards, whatever they put in stores, that this man was wielding a gun and gonna shoot people.
Yeah.
And so a cop comes along and shoots this guy, shoots him dead. And then later the video comes out that no, he wasn't. He was looking at the gun. He was kind of putting it up to his shoulder, pointing it at the counter. I mean, he wasn't pointing it at anybody. He was testing the gun, the fit of the gun. It was so obvious that this young man was not about to harm anyone, but some person got wacky, insane, called the police, and the police comes running in and shoots the guy because he's standing there with a gun. It wasn't loaded. It was from the display.
They've got the people to be so paranoid of one another. I mean, I was mentioning about how back in the old days, if you was walking down the road, there was like this international sign. You put your thumb out and tell somebody you need a ride or whatever. You're hitching a ride. Nowadays, people won't stop to pick up strangers. Very rarely will anybody ever stop to pick up somebody they don't know because they've been told that it might be an axe murderer, you know, the serial killer.
In a way, unfortunately, it used to be, I think, a very limited percentage of axe murders on the road hitchhiking.
Yeah.
But today, there are very well could be.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it with all the craziness that they show on TV. And some of the movies these days are just hideous.
Well, they scare the crap out of you intentionally. They put mistrust in you toward fellow man, woman. So there's all deliberate to keep people terrified and separated from each other, mistrusting of each other. And this is what's happening. You know, I remember seeing this video recently of this. You know, people have their iPhones now or cell phones. What are they called? I don't even know what they're called today.
They got tons of different phones.
Because I don't have one. But they take pictures of situations everywhere. Like, you know, you have people who are in their car, pulled over by the police, they put their phone on right away, and so in a way that's good, I guess. But then you have these people walking down the street, this family, again, a black family. Here we are again, and a white woman standing on her cell phone screaming at the people saying, "You're not allowed." Now, they're in a park where there's these little stands where you cook stuff on.
Yep.
And a picnic bench, right? And that's where they are. They're having their picnic, their family picnic. They got hot dogs and hamburgers on this little burner thing that's put there for that reason, that you use these charcoal briquettes, and that's what you use. You know, the town doesn't have a pile of wood there and you're not building, you know, your little fire to cook. No, they have, you bring briquettes and you put them in these little things. Well, this woman was screaming at them saying, "You can't use briquettes. That's against the law. You're not allowed to have a fire here." I mean, she was on her cell phone and somebody else was videoing her. So bystanders were coming by and bystanders were videoing the whole thing. But it shows this woman talking to she called 911, so she's talking to the police on the other end saying these people are breaking the law. They got briquettes in the briquette thing. It was insane. And this woman, so people are videoing her on their cell phones, and she's trying to walk away, get away from the person who's videoing her. Say now she's screaming at the police and say, they're attacking me, and they won't leave me alone. And then another woman called 911 and complained to the police because this little 10-year-old girl was selling lemonade outside her family's apartment.
Yeah, it used to be a normal thing when you was a kid. Maybe have a little lemonade stand. You could, you know, have some fun when it was. But nowadays, they actually come shut you down.
Because you don't have a license and you're 10 years old.
Yeah, that's terrible, man. See, that's...
Well, what I'm saying is, so today we have surveillance everywhere, people surveilling each other. And on some level, it's okay, it's a good thing, because we see the truth sometimes, and then other times we see the insanity of people, and they're using these tools, these technologies against each other, and you have, you know, people who are over the top and over the edge, and terrorized and fearful of everybody. And if you have a family out there on a picnic, you know, using briquettes, this woman comes along and calls the police on them.
That's crazy. Look, this word hypocrisy, I'm sitting here reading, there's two separate definitions that popped up when I Googled the word up, because I'm thinking about how the mainstream media and the governments and, you know, people, you know, in special interest groups are sitting there on one side trying to tell you, you know, we got to all get along and everybody's got to be respectful of each other's differences and diversity and all that kind of stuff. But then they run around and try to basically promote the same thing that they're supposedly fighting against. And so the first definition of hypocrisy is the practice of claiming to have moral standards or beliefs to which one's own behavior does not conform. It says pretense. But on the second one, it says hypocrisy is a contrivance of false appearance of virtue or goodness while concealing real character or inclinations, especially with respect to religious or moral beliefs. Hence, in general sense, hypocrisy may involve dissimulation. What does that word mean, dissimulation? A pretense. Or a sham. I can understand the sham word. But either way, it's like, I feel like this world, the people in this world are being played like a banjo. You know, and a lot of the information that comes out here on the internet has to be scrutinized and you know, really seriously taken a look at to ensure you're not having one played over on you. Now, I saw a video yesterday, and I don't know what to think about this video, but it really disturbed me, and it also put my tinfoil hat on trying to think about, why would anybody try to perpetrate such a massive fraud on the people? And on one hand, the doggone secret societies like to get dirt, or so to speak, or try to embarrass somebody to the extent that they always have something to hold over their head or whatever. But it had to do with Judge Kavanaugh and this other lady. What's this lady's name?
Ford. Yeah. Blasey Ford.
Yeah, okay. Well, there was a guy that was showing a video where he took a picture of the lady that was accusing the judge of the sex crime back in the day, and cut these pictures in half, made them kind of, you know, translucent, or they're transparent, and then slid these pictures right over the top of each other. And it's, if you want to talk about coincidence, and keep in mind, with digital things, they can do a lot of stuff these days, but it looked like he was her wearing a wig. All right, and I'm like, okay, I don't know whether this is true or even believable or not, but you know, the desperate.
I'm sorry.
Well,
what?
The system is are they this desperate that they could actually put propaganda out in that kind of fashion, that where you really look like this lady looks, and then she even held her hand up. And he had his hand up during the swearing-in portion, and this person takes the two hands and matches them identically, and I'm like, I'm not seeing this. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, there's only one purpose for somebody to do this, is to try to muddy up the water yet even further to make this guy look, you know, worse than they already made him look. So you got to be really on your game, otherwise.
You got to be on your toes these days, because people don't realize the technology.
Yeah,
you
could be fooled by that. I mean, I don't know whether, now I got a doubt. I don't know whether it was him in drag or whether it was was some sort of propaganda. But now that I saw that, it's in my mind, and I'm like, hold on a second, this can't be, no. You know, you see what I mean?
Oh my gosh, I didn't see that, but I did see things that were taken specifically and manipulated to make things look like the way they wanted you to.
Well, and they think. Even did that back when Obama was in play. That like Obama was playing two roles. He was Osama bin Laden and he was the president. And I'm like, you know, this is where all the world of stage come to my mind, because I mean, are we living in this big movie and they're just you know, playing this like a banjo to get us to act foolish and kill each other? And it's like,
well, when you have the technology ability to basically focus in on a person's face when they are emotional due to being wrongly accused, and then you put a headline, do you want this man, this violent-looking man, on the Supreme Court? Now, but you don't know the rest of the story. You don't know what he was talking about in that moment. You don't know why that expression came upon his face. But that's what I'm talking about. And this is what people were using to post, is that particular image.
Yep.
And also upon her. They picked out these particular images of a heightened emotion to prove that what she was saying was real and true, because look at that emotion. But what we're dealing with is this technology, right? And the technology now, you can watch a video of a person and they are speaking, but what they're really speaking is not being shown on the video, because they have the technology to actually put words in that person's mouth.
Oh, yeah. They got that digital deal where they can actually take a whole bunch of clips of things that you've said throughout your entire life and actually manipulate, because with all the different pictures taken of your face, facial recognition and all that, they can literally steer it where it looks like just like you're saying something you never even said.
Yes, you can watch a person's mouth, and you hear a voice speaking, that person's voice, but in fact, the technology is so precise that the words formed, their mouth is formed, actually emanates the words that are picked out to show, oh, that's what this person is saying, but in fact, it is not true. This is what we're dealing with today, and there are people out there, in order to win at all costs, will go to these extremes.
Yeah, they don't care if they destroy somebody's life making things up. They don't even have to be guilty. All you got to do is say it, and then other people who don't know whether they're guilty or not, they might look at them and, you know, they don't like the way they look. Yeah, well, he looks like he's guilty. How do you look like you're guilty? I mean, unless you're sitting
there. Well, that's a big thing that people say. He looks guilty. He looks guilty. You know, that's what we're dealing with.
What's that old deal about don't judge a book by its cover kind of thing?
Oh, well, that's out the window. That's a wise, very wise saying. I think we can learn from that, because it's sort of like, well, I've had those experiences, you know, I think we all have. Like, you'll see a person who may look kind of raggedy, you know, like, they might be looking like their clothes aren't so well kept, or they might, you know, I mean, this is like certain appearances and judgments abound upon that person, that they're a lowlife, that they're dirty, that they're, you know, unintelligent, that they're whatever it is. And yet, if you get to know that person, that's somebody's father or somebody's brother or somebody's sister, someone's mother, and they're good people. They had down luck, down in their luck, and they're out on the street, but they were a Vietnam vet, or they were an artist. This Japanese man, I saw this beautiful documentary. In a way, it was heartbreaking, but it had a good ending. This woman lived in the Heights in Brooklyn, and she used to go to this little green market. She passed by it, and was on a corner, and in the green market, I don't know if you've ever been to the city, they extend their market out on the street with tarps or canopies, and they put out their bins with fruits and veggies outside, so sort of like extending their selling area.
Yeah, they got a thing like that down there in Kansas City, like that big old farmer's market kind of thing.
Yeah, so, but in the city, it's like that, these green markets, and there was this tarp attached to the corner, and this, it was kind of like, it turned out that it was the home of a homeless man who was Japanese. And this woman, and he'd put out his little, so the people who owned the market allowed this man to park himself there and live there out on the street. And, he had his little tarps all set up and his boxes, where he, you know, all of, protected himself, his little cardboard boxes. And, but he was an artist and he would display these watercolors out on the street for people to buy. And he had all his belongings stuck inside this little tarp area and behind these cardboard boxes. And he must have been like about 75, 80, I don't know. Anyway, this woman bought a couple of his, she's just curious about him, as maybe we should be curious about people on the street. So she talked to him and got to know him, and she'd buy a couple of his watercolors because they were quite astonishingly beautiful. And she got to know him and asking him all kinds of questions. And so she found out his story, and come to find out he had been a professor during the war. And I don't know, I think it was a professor, but also an artist, a well-known artist during that period of time, World War II. And he was taken, his whole family was taken to the Japanese camps here in the United States during the war. And we know about that story, right? Yeah. But his family was since long gone, but he had a terrible experience. You know, his whole family was destroyed. They lost their home, they lost everything, and they were dragged off to the Japanese camps here in the United States. And that pretty much disrupted his life as a young person, so on. So his story was astonishing to her. His talent was extraordinary. And he's living on the street, you know, over with a tarp and a cardboard boxes. And she decided to help this man. And the documentary goes on, their story, about how she invited him, because it was coming winter, and he had lived there throughout the winter two other times. But she decided she could not really allow this other human being, this man, to live out on the street in that winter. And she invited him to come to her apartment. She had an extra bedroom, and so the story continues with them trying to get along, a stranger and another person who is opening her home and her door to this stranger who she felt compassion for. And so it was an amazing thing how they had to learn to, you know, live together, get to know each other, and keep the civility and compassion going. And a couple of years went by, and she worked so hard to get this man help through the system that eventually he did get help, and he wound up in this senior home, the senior residence, that was a lovely place where he was now teaching art in that community, you know, in the community building. And his life was turned around. His story was very powerful and touching and emotional to what happened to him, you know. He was a really kind, lovely man who was down and out, living on the streets. He was a professor and art teacher of art and so on and so forth, a really renowned person during a time. And this woman reached out to him, and it changed her life, of course. It was not an easy process, but it turned out to be a beautiful ending. And it was really an amazing thing, because you think about, okay, here's a man who's living on the street, down and out. Nobody cares about him. He walks by him every day. And he has a story. He has a history. He's a human being.
Yeah.
So we make judgments about people, and we don't even know them. Oh, there's a couple of black guys over there on the sidewalk talking, and somebody goes by and gets freaked out because there's two black men gathering on the street, and they call the police on them. Or, I mean, it's that on that level today where we are, or people are picnicking out there, and somebody calls the police on them. Or, I mean, there's so many stories like this. People screaming at each other in the stores, telling them, speak English, you're living in my country now. Get out of here, go home, go back to your own country. This is where we've come to today, you know.
Well,
and
It's a shame and it's crazy because there's a lot of, I'm sure there's a lot of stories like the one you just explained that a lot of wonderful people. But it seems like it's always the average Joe who somehow or another is able to, even though this world is in the shape that it is, find some sort of strength inside them to do something good, to bring somebody, you know, quality of living up, you know, better, you know, to give them back their, what's the word I'm looking for, you know?
Dignity.
Yeah,
well,
dignity, self-esteem.
Their humanness.
You know,
their dignity, their humanness. We're talking humanity here, but I'm just thinking of the term, you know, the words, don't judge a man by his color, and various other statements like that, and we tend to do that, you know. It's sort of like an automatic imprint, you know. I mean, the same thing with people who are overweight, you know. I'm just throwing out some stuff here, thinking about how we are programmed to think about people. We're programmed by the system, you know,
They break down a lot of people's self-esteem and then wonder why it is people are reacting the way they do, why people are getting so depressed or whatever, because they don't think that they're worthy, you know. I'm fat and I'm ugly and all this kind of stuff, and then it gets everybody, you know, thinking you gotta look a certain way, you gotta dress a certain way, and then on the other hand they're sitting there trying to talk about how you should be respectful to diversity and men believe in themselves to be women or vice versa and all this kind of stuff. You should be accepting of all this while at the same time promoting, you know, taking the human spirit down to the dirt, more or less. Does that make sense?
You have this whole thing about how I feel it's, I'm always saying that this is a systematic agenda.
Well, I think it is. I think it has to be intentional. There's no way around it.
Because you take little children, and we're like little sponges, you know. We believe the big people because they're the ones who are the authorities, and you take an agenda, like a think tank agenda, people who say, let's see how we can manipulate our populations. We'll take the children first, and we'll indoctrinate the children into what we want them to believe about themselves or believe about others, or how we want them to behave, or what we want them to aspire to, or how we want them, you know, to manipulate them so they'll go to war for us easily, or to attack those who are whatever we want them to attack. So you start with children, because I believe that, and you know I've said this before, and I think you agree with me, is that we are not born with sin, like we're told, and we are not born with prejudice and hate. That's something we learn about. We learn that type of behavior toward others, yeah, and about ourselves. We learn about ourselves because the system has already indoctrinated our parents to treat us in a certain way. They think they're doing good, you know, but if you have a, I mean, just take this simple thing. So you're pregnant. Your mother and father, they're pregnant, and now you find out before the baby's even born what gender it's going to be. So everybody runs out and goes to get pink, or they run out and go get blue, and their toys are, you know, gender specific. And so this is an indoctrination immediately about what that child's, you know, preferences are going to be, and so it's the same thing across the board. You know, so children are right away manipulated into behaving and acting and expectations about themselves or who they are or who they are not, according to the systematic agenda to destroy our fundamental nature, really, and to crush our spirit. You know, I mean, this is what we're dealing with. So, and it's kind of a conspiracy, one of the conspiracy wackadoodles to actually say that we've been manipulated for generations to become, you know, what we are today. And so you really don't know who you are. And I've had many people say to me, come to me troubled and say, you know, I don't know who I am, what I'm doing here, what my purpose is. I mean, people are confused because they've been indoctrinated in a certain way, but there's something inside of them is coming awake saying, well, who am I really? What should I aspire to? Who am I? What is my dream? You know?
there's a deal I'm looking at here. It's talking about why question everything, and in today's day and age, they use doubt. They put doubt in your mind to basically get you to be questioning people, whether they're innocent, guilty, or wrong or right. This goes all the way back.
We have a law that says you're innocent until proven guilty. Today, that standard's out the window. But I'm just thinking of the words. Think of the numbers of people who have been indoctrinated through the Catholic dogma that you are a sinner. Therefore, if you believe, because you're a child, you believe, oh, I'm a sinner, and then those persons tell you, but I can save you. I can absolve you of your sins. You have to come with me, though, and you must follow what I tell you and my rule, and so on. So you think of the millions of people who grew up indoctrinated with I am a sinner, and think of what that does to a person, okay? Because you're told to believe in a God, and that God loves you, you are a child of God, made in the image of God, but you are a sinner, and you will go to hell, but I can absolve you of your sins, and I can, prevent you from being burned in hell or going to purgatory, and you must follow my rule. So you're a little person. You believe this. Then you grow up, and this imprint of I'm a sinner stuff, is embedded in you. I've got a black mark on me right off the bat. What does that do to you? What does that do to you psychologically? How does a person survive that imprint, and come to know that they are not a sinner? Not originally a sinner, okay? Doesn't mean it may not have done some bad stuff, but as you grow into an adult, I'm talking about the beginning of a child's life and how they are imprinted with negative beliefs about themselves. You're no good. That's one. Or who do you think you are? Or you're bad. You're whatever it is that imprints us, sticks with us. It's like a cellular experience, and that's an agenda to disrupt and corrupt who we really truly are and manipulate us into following someone else's rule, because now we're terrified we're going to go to hell and burn and whatever. I don't know. So I'm going to read this, All the World's a Stage.
Yeah, go ahead. This goes all the way back to Socrates. It's like there's a big long page about the philosophic and basically
the philosophies of Socrates.
Yeah, talk about question and everything. Go ahead and read that one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go here. So this was actually we've heard this term. I guess I've heard this term. All the world's a stage, but I never knew. Okay. So this was a speech given in one of William Shakespeare's plays, All the World's a Stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. At first we are the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms, and then the whining schoolboy with his satchel and shining morning face, creeping like snail, unwillingly to go to school. And then the lover, sighing like a furnace with a woeful ballad made to his mistress's eyebrow. And then we're a soldier, full of strange oaths, and bearded like the pard, jealous in honor, sudden and quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation, even in the cannon's mouth. And then the justice, in fair round belly with a good capon, lined with eyes severe and beard a formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances. And so he plays his part. The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, meaning you're in the sixth age of your life, with spectacles on your nose and a pouch on your side, and his youthful hose well saved, a world too wide for his shrunk shank and his big manly voice, turning again toward childish treble, pipes and whistles in his sound. And last scene of all, there ends this strange eventful history, is second childishness in mere oblivion, sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything. These are the seven stages that basically William Shakespeare noted in All the World's a Stage, and we go through these systems, you know, and I'm sure there's one for the female. These are, you know, but it says all men and women are merely players. We exit and we exit and we entrance, and so we play many parts. This is the wisdom of this, his acts being in seven ages, you know. Uh-huh. So, in the meanwhile, here we are, all playing on the stage, you know, and we're being manipulated to play on the stage without really a conscious awareness of who we really are.
It's like a chess game, and we're all the pawns.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't even want to read nothing that Socrates said. It gives me a headache.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man. It's like, these folks, I swear, they spent their lives learning, you know, how the human mind works and manipulating it using keywords and push-button quotes and all that kind of jazz just to be able to control the way you think, what you do, to guide you to their agenda. So, when it's all said and done, when you're going to war, you're thinking it was your idea to begin with. It wasn't your idea. You were manipulated into it. Why do you want to go over into foreign land and shoot somebody you never met? You know, because supposedly they're the bad guys. This is what they're doing to humanity. They're using every tactic under the sun. Hypocrisy of epic proportions. That and they're on one side of their neck telling you how you got to treat each other nice and be accepting of differences, and then turn around and call you a racist out of the other side of their neck. If you don't agree with what they say, if you don't agree with their policies or their agenda, if you have any kind of, you know, disagreement with them at all, they go from talking logic to basically personal attacks, trying to make you look bad to everybody else around you. You got to blend in with the crowd. If you understand what I'm saying, it's just me. It's just nuts. So how do we find our way through this mess?
Oh boy.
If you can't trust your own eyes, and if you can't trust your own mind and your discernment because of the ridiculousness that's going on, I feel bad for the kids. Because they're going to be going into a new era where the digital technology gets better every single year, and at some point there's going to be a merging between reality and, you know, the digital world that... you know, like holographic technologies that you wouldn't even be able to tell you was in a hologram when you was actually in reality or whatever. You see what I'm saying? Like those virtual reality machines that they got?
Yeah.
I will never put one of those goggles on there, because the way that my mind is right now, I wouldn't know whether I got stuck in there and I'm still there or if I'm there right now. I don't want that, you know, I don't want that kind of...
Well, I mean, we've talked about sometimes tongue-in-cheek, but in a way, it's sort of like, are we in a video game? Are we?
Sometimes you know. You wonder, because of what we're seeing here. I mean, every up is down and sideways is crooked or whatever. It just, you can't visualize, if you got a decent heart and a good soul, you can't visualize the way that people treat each other. And the mainstream media and all the, the industries for entertainment, so-called entertainment, they're basically manipulating people's mind. Young people are coming up thinking that violence is glorified. You know, I got my gold around my neck and I got my gun and I'm going to get mine and you're going to get yours and that kind of deal. And it just takes you away from being, a loving human. As far as I'm concerned, it takes you down a bad path, and then they wonder why so many people end up in jail. Why, there are people that are running around doing things to each other all the time. Lying and stealing and all that kind of craziness. Paul Harvey, I swear, every time I listen to that doggone thing, he laid it right out. And how do we get... I hope there's this great awakening that is going on and that everybody stays awake and they start guiding their children down a different path towards the future, you know, to make them respectful with each other and, you know, others. If you see what I'm trying to say, it's like a difference between you and me when we were young and the way that we were raised up as opposed to, you know, generation later or so, and the way that these people are acting now.
I don't know about you, and I'm pretty sure you're on this, but when I was a kid, we played outside.
Yeah.
Everything, we went out from the morning till the night. I mean, we were outside in nature, and we were, you know, making our own way out there to entertain ourselves, you know?
Yeah, we learned, we lived, and we invented, and...
Well, we were explorative and creative, and nobody did it for us. Nobody just handed us a device, and, you know, so we get dumbed down, and, you know, but I think the different generations, I think the technology on some level is important, but, you know, technology can be turned... to no good, you know, to do no good. I think we have to use critical thinking, which I think is going out the window. You know, again, we are in a position, and it's increasingly getting that way more and more, that we are being manipulated to make decisions and determinations on all manner of things, basically to be led where they want us to go.
Well, the danger of this technology, I can track all the way back to something as simple as the digital calculator. Back when I was in school, and like the Texas Instrument people came out with a really cool, portable digital calculator. I was like, man, if I had one of those, I wouldn't even have to think of doing math. And, you know, eventually I did get me a calculator, but basically, all I did was cheat myself out of training myself in math to be able to think, you know, this math through my head. And so you get to the modern day and age, you go to a store and you look at people when they're ringing up the cash register. If you really pay attention, some stores don't have prices or number values on them. They have a picture of the article that they're selling. And so all the person has to do is look as a soda pop. He pushes on the button that has the soda can on it, you know. And so this is basically making this person, they don't know the math. And if something goes wrong, they got to call for help for a manager to help them figure out, you didn't give me back the right amount of change. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I think that, yes, as certain technologies, of course, have eliminated our ability to critical thinking or even developing ourselves further, because it's already done for us. You push a button and there it is. So I think when we have to figure things out, we have to go to deeper places, you know. So I think this is eliminating that ability where we actually go into deeper places and deeper connectedness of things and critical thinking and understanding of things.
Well, at some point,
sensory perception and discernment.
At some point, they'll be relying on an artificial intelligence to literally make decisions for them, and so...
Well, that's where we're heading, I think, A.
Yeah.
I found something here that actually relates to hypocrisy and actors on a stage. So, and this is... Listen, this is interesting, because this is in regards to the Bible, Matthew 6, on hypocrisy. So I'm going to read this, because I didn't read the whole thing, but I think this is going to be fascinating, because let's look at this perception of Jesus, Yeshua. So in the modern age, we have tended to reduce the notion of hypocrisy to duplicity. The modern notion is that a hypocrite is someone who says one thing but does another. A person is basically a two-faced person who is inconsistent or phony. But Jesus' teaching on hypocrisy does not exclude this notion, but it is far richer. So the biblical understanding enunciated by Jesus is rooted in the original meaning of the Greek word hypokrita, which means stage actors. I didn't know that.
I didn't either. But that's the whole thing, is that our language is so complex.
Exactly. So at one level, it is easy to see how this word has come to mean someone who is phony. For what they claim to be, they really are not. They are just acting a role.
Like a wolf in sheep's clothing.
But when no one is looking, in other words, the audience is gone, they revert back to their true self, which is somewhat quite different. But Jesus, in his teaching here, develops the understanding, I'm going to use that word, far more richly, that shows how sad and poignant hypocrisy is, what its origins are, and how it can be overcome. So here's hypocrisy defined. Excuse me. In effect, Jesus describes hypocrisy as the sad state of a person who reduces themselves to being an actor on a stage because he does not know God the Father. There are many people who live their life in a desperate search for human approval and for applause. They discern their dignity, their worth, not from Creator, who is in effect a stranger to them, but from what other human beings think of them. They are willing to adapt themselves often in dramatic ways to win approval. They are willing to play many roles and wear many masks to give the audience what they want. They are like actors on a stage, all the world's a stage, hence Shakespeare speaks, who seek applause or perhaps laughter and approval. And notice the way that Yeshua describes the heart of hypocrisy. Now he said to his disciples, take care not to perform righteous deeds in order that people may see them.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord goes on to say that they blow a trumpet so that others will see them giving alms. They pray ostentatiously so that others may see they are praying, and they alter their appearance so that others may see that they are fasting. The heart of hypocrisy, thus, is the goal of such a person is to be seen. They are on stage, and they seek to ingratiate themselves to the audience to win applause. Hence, they engage in some action in order that people may see them. It is clear that this is ultimately very sad.
Yeah.
I agree.
This is mind-blowing because I'm sitting here reading up different deals of hypocrisy. It's like people who are vegetarians on a moral basis but wear a leather jacket.
Exactly. So a lonely actor on a stage performing whatever role is required in order to win approval from the current audience, but their inner core or deepest self is repressed and replaced by the demands of others. This is the true heart of and the description of hypocrisy. Now, many take this desperate need for approval from others to very self-destructive extremes. Many young people, due to peer pressure, will engage in dangerous and unhealthy practices to win approval. Some will drop out of school, join gangs, commit crimes. Others will drink heavily or use drugs, or I'm going to add sniff glue here.
Yeah.
Because they'll gain approval from their peers, right? And yeah. Still others will tattoo and pierce their bodies and gait. Now, Jesus isn't talking about this. This is the writer, obviously. But he's elaborating on what is said here about hypocrisy. So, still others will tattoo and pierce their bodies, engage in sexual activity, and do many risky things. They need for approval is often the deep drive that underlies this desperate behavior. But like actors on a stage seeking applause, they rush to fill these roles and wait for the applause and the acceptance. And adults, too, will often compromise core principles in order to fit in and to be liked, gain whatever it is, and so on. Christians will hide their faith, playing the role of a secular modern in order to win approval. Some will act deceitfully to please a boss Others will gossip or engage in any number of sinful behaviors to ingratiate themselves to a group. It is also clear that our modern notion of hypocrisy as duplicity, while incomplete, is not wrong either. Now, why does the hypocrite act inconsistently, often in a duplicitous manner? Because the audience changes, and he must change with it. So to one group he will say yes, and to another group he will say no. Since the goal of the hypocrite, the actor, is to be seen and to win approval, the answer must change if the group does, if the group changes. And so therefore he will morph, hide his true thoughts, or outright lie to gain approval. He no longer has a core. His identity is outside of himself, in whichever the audience requires in order to grant him approval.
Wow, that's just mind-blowing.
Well, so why does this happen? Here, let's go further. You want to go further with this?
Yeah, but let me tell one more little thing inside there. Facebook did this deal where they felt bad for what they did. They made this program that would basically every time somebody commented on something you said on Facebook, it would send you out a notification and give you what they said a dopamine hit, you know. And so if nobody thumbed it up or they thumbed it down, it could actually affect your emotional status, because you know you're like on a waiting for people to recognize that you did something good or said something nice or whatever. But they use that to get more interaction on Facebook, to get people to put more content on there. They basically was manipulating you with that.
Yeah, it's very easy to manipulate people, because here as we're speaking about hypocrisy, it's like people are acting and behaving and speaking in the way that will get them people's applause or recognition.
Yep.
And it goes both ways. You know, well, let's see what the audience is doing. So at this time when the audience is pushing hate and vitriol and divisiveness, so therefore I'm going to join them. I'm going to be a hypocrite. I need their approval. Okay, and I can see that if I have a different perspective that doesn't agree with them, I'm going to be attacked. So I don't want to go there, right?
Yep.
Why does this happen? It happens to a person who does not know, of course, they're saying God, Creator, I'm going to use the word Creator, or God, the Father. The great tragedy of many lives is that they do not know their, and I'm going to use this term, they do not know their source, okay? Because I know people get a little, and this is a sad thing, but I know people get kind of like turned off about faith or God or religion, and I'm not talking about, I don't agree with religion, because to me it's organized, and I don't like being organized in my own spiritual way, because I am a sovereign spiritual being and I know my source. I'm very spiritual, okay? So I just wanted to put that out. So, but this is about hypocrisy. So this is a perspective about what's happening to us. And you can agree with this, or maybe you won't agree with this, but is this about the fact that we don't know our sacredness? They're using the term they may know about God, but they do not personally know God or His love for them. And I'm always saying, you know, we have to come to terms with who we really truly are, how we were created. You know, you may not believe or you know, what is told to us in the Bible, we are created in our Creator's image. But to me, I'm going to say I agree with that, because I believe that we are sacred children. We are sacred little beings when we come here. We are not corrupted. We are not, you know, that the instigation of hatred and prejudices and all that stuff, separatists, comes later. So let's say God is at best a benevolent stranger who runs the universe, but he is in some remote place called heaven, and the interaction that many have with this being is vague and even abstract. God exists, but he is on the periphery of life. In effect, he is a stranger to many. Notice the remedy that Yeshua assigns for each example of hypocrisy. He says, your heavenly Father who sees in secret will repay you for giving alms. Your Heavenly Father, who sees in secret, will repay you for praying. Your Heavenly Father, who sees what is hidden, will repay you for your fasting. In other words, the goal in life and the remedy for hypocrisy is that it is enough that your Heavenly Father or your Creator, I'm going to say Mother Father because that's what I tend to feel strongly about, not a man in a beard and a white robe up there on a throne. I just can't gather that into my experience as real. But that your Heavenly Creator or the being that created us sees everything that we do.
Yep.
Now, of course, as long as this Creator remains a distant and aloof figure, what is seen never will be enough for us. But to the degree that we begin to experience this Creator's love for us, His providence and His goodwill toward us, the miracles, I'm going to add, then we become less concerned with what others think. And I totally agree with that. When you come to know yourself as sacred, and you can say that when I know myself, came to know myself as a sacred being, I realized that I was deeply connected to Source, who created me, who created this miracle that we live on, the Mother. And that gave me inner peace. So I became less concerned, really, with what other people thought of me. Okay, so we begin to come down off the stage. Yes, we do, boy. And be less concerned for the approval of men and women, and more focused on and then satisfied with the approval or our connectedness, I'm going to say, of Creator.
Yeah, he also said something about people that would do, you know, good deeds, you know, for everybody to notice that they already got their reward, so they wouldn't be rewarded in heaven because they already got their reward by getting all the people, you know, its approval of what they just did. You know, it's like if I give you you know, a gift or something like that, and I go around telling everybody, look, I gave Barb a gift. You know, I'm such a nice guy for helping her out. You know, I essentially didn't give you anything. If you understand what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think this is about when people say to me, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know my purpose. So this is really what I'm reading here, and I'm going to take it this way. I'm going to express it this way, because what this is to find our authentic self that Creator created us to be. So when we shift into an understanding of who we really truly are, all these things sort of fall into place. We get off the stage. We become less the actor or the hypocrite, acting in a way that we believe or we're told as children that will get us applause, yeah. Right? Is that clear?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, but the thing is that the way that society is, it puts doubt in your mind about yourself by the way you look or, you know.
Well, yeah, but that's deliberate. So the point is, here we are in a moment in time, I feel, that takes a lot of courage for us,
yep,
to find our authentic self, to get off the stage, to stop pleasing people, to stop running with the wolf pack, the herd, the sheeple. You know, so we become less desperate for their approval. When we find the truth within ourselves, we become, the desperation for approval disappears. So it's not that we become sociopaths, caring not one whit what others think. We still groom ourselves and so forth, but we are not obsessed with the good opinion of others. It is enough that we know our Creator and that we are loved.
Yep.
So hypocrisy, at least, is a richer concept, the way Yeshua described it, a deeper level that we often think of today, to this sad and poignant problem, because it is a sad and poignant problem, because people are so lost, they want approval, they need approval, therefore they'll turn their backs on their own true nature, on their own spirit within, just to please others or to get applause, right?
Yep. When you go through the world that we live in today, and you question your own reality, and you question your own sanity, these folks out there, they've had years, if not thousands of years, to learn all the ways to manipulate humans, and that the hypocrisy that they show by telling you you need to treat people one way and then turn around and, you know, glorify the opposite of what they're saying, it makes it hard for somebody, you know, to be able to be themselves. You know, like I said, they're telling you, when somebody believes themselves to be, you know, a different sex or a different race or whatever, you're supposed to be accepting of that. But on the other hand, they use that same thing as a divisive way, a way to keep you, you know, I don't agree with this particular person over there, so I'm not gonna associate with them, kind of thing. It all falls back to the same exact thing. Keeping your family members, your brothers and sisters around the world constantly divided and fighting amongst each other. This is, and until you find some sort of spiritual grounding like you have, Barbara, then you're just pretty much lost in this matrix. You know, like I said, that episode where I'm down there hanging out with a turtle, most folks might have thought I was crazy, but it was an eye-opening experience for me where, you know, I found myself closer to nature and my creator because, you know, the world itself, trying to weed through the lies is almost impossible. And the way that technology has advanced where they can sit there and basically write the story or change history and show you a visual of, you know, it's like that movie where that lady's in space. She really looks like she's in space. I mean, that's some really good, incredible graphics. And so when you think about that type of Hollywood production and then all the lies and the manipulation and the propaganda, you could be sitting here watching the news and there's something that they're saying is going on which is causing you a lot of stress or maybe even making you angry to the extent where you want to go to war with another nation, when all along it was all a stage. It was all a show that, you see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, it's over again. It's the world is a stage and there are manipulators and there are those who are being manipulated and there we all go. But so
we need some sort of solution on how people can discern for themselves without, you know, it's like, I can't be skeptical of every single thing in this world, even though at this stage in the game I am skeptical of every single thing. I question everything. Is this real? Is it not real? Heck, am I do I even exist? You know, we got these people out there that think it's important enough to write artificial intelligence programs that will censor all your words, so that you don't say the wrong words to people because you get people thinking about certain things. Maybe they get angry and the politicians don't have the power anymore because all the people stand up against all the corruption, you know. So they don't want you saying things like that. So not only controlling what you're saying, controlling your actions, controlling what you feel about yourself or what you believe your heritage is, or even, you know, completely rewriting history to something completely opposite of the actual truth. And here we are out here trying to find the truth and solutions and trying to better the world situation, help each other out, you know. And we're up against something that I just don't understand it. I really don't. It's mind-blowing.
Well, I think that your question before, how do we get ourselves out of this, is a very important question because... So here's where we are, I feel, today. The major people in our, you know, the populations in the world, we have to look at generations of indoctrinations to believe in authority. That's number one. So if we believe in authority and everything authority tells us to do, to be, and to strive for, and so on, we've lost something about ourselves. We've ignored and denied our own true nature. Yeah. Okay. So there we start there. So now, if people listening to me may not be able to basically accept this concept, well, I'm going to call it a reality because I've come to conclude that it is a reality in my own experience, You know, and again, I'm sharing things and you're sharing things, and we're not commanding or demanding people believe in us. We're just sharing our perspectives and giving some, you know, ideas, you know, and of study and of contemplation and reflection. That's number one. We have to be, so if you've never had the opportunity to sit quietly and reflect and contemplate truths or lies, because you'd say, well, why should I do that? The authorities are telling me the truth, you know, and the authorities are telling me what to believe and who to believe in. So right off the bat, that may be a struggle for people. That concept of, wait, I do have an ability. I'm a human being. I'm a sovereign being. I have a mind, and I also have free will. I have sensory abilities. I have what we call a truth meter that basically gives me information. And the information I'm receiving needs to be discerned through that. Now, what is that truth meter? Okay, that truth meter, I call it the truth meter because it is a sensory ability that uses a tactic, or I guess you'd say a process of discernment through frequency. So because why I'm saying that is because someone speaking the truth is a different frequency than someone speaking a lie to you. That's an entirely different frequency. Now,
yeah, it resonates with you.
It resonates with you. It has a different energy. It feels differently. So that's what I'm talking about, the feeling of something, or what we sense is a truth meter. But you have to know the difference. Now, if you've been indoctrinated to believe totally in authority and how you're being led, you may have a struggle with finding your own truth meter, because that tool, that gift of our sensory perception through frequency has been dulled or removed on some level.
That's why I think the first step to all this would be to get out away from all the media sources and technology, and just get out there, kind of like that grounding thing where people go out and walk barefoot in
the
grass.
That's important. So the solution, so here we are, you're just bringing up something very important. So let's say I'm speaking about the sensory perception, the frequencies and energies that we are dealing with, because that's what is real. That is a very real thing, because we are all... Now, if you don't believe me, well, scientists basically have done studies, so they are authorities. So let's say people tend to believe in the authorities, and the scientists have finally said that everything is energy, okay? That everything in existence, including us and the nature and all things, have a frequency, they have an energy.
Yep.
So if you don't believe what I'm saying, go to the scientists. So they've said that, okay, I don't need the scientists to tell me that, because... Basically, you know, I grew up with this sensory perception, this ability, you know, these I guess people call them psychic abilities or tendencies, you know, to discern through frequency, to discern through inner guidance, which we all have, by the way, but again, that may be dulled because you believe in the authorities. You've been acclimated from the time you were small to believe only in what the authorities say. So you've denied your own truth and your own wisdom and your own gifts given to everyone, okay? So this is what. So trying to figure this out, how do we escape from the system that is basically controlling us, our minds, our beliefs, our thoughts, what we aspire to, even about who we think we are?
Yeah.
And so we have to do our work, I guess you'd say. You have to, first of all, want to be determined to actually say, hey, wait a second, am I being controlled? Have I been being controlled? Is the whole world here, people are being controlled by some authorities? Is there something such as that? Is that true? You know, so you have a lot of questions here that are going to start flying around, but I'm hoping that somehow we have piqued your interest in this, and so that you may step away for a while at least and say, well, let me just test this. Are you an adventurer? Do you want change? Do you feel something's wrong, but you can't pinpoint it? Do you have a yearning inside of yourself? Do you have a longing that is constant, a longing for something, but you can't identify it? So these are things to listen to. Perhaps it is that your own spirit or your own true nature within you is speaking to you. I'm just saying that, you know, because I know a lot of people are feeling that. They're feeling very confused. They're feeling like something is wrong, but I don't know what it is.
Well, to any common sense kind of thinking, the world is wrong at this point in the game. I mean, look, we're sitting there.
Well, we are talking common. You're talking common sense.
Well, it ain't so common anymore, but basically, when it comes down to somebody presented me with a problem, you know, and I said, okay, well, I can help resolve that. When it come to, like, alternative energy stuff and the Mad Science show, where they said there was a problem in the world and it needed fixing. So, you know, I'm kind of a guy that's got solutions and in that kind of mechanical mind or whatever, that I felt like I had something I could add and help to it. So I'm sitting here trying to watch and explain to the world of what I believe is possible that we could actually accomplish if we, you know, came together to do it. But I'm also watching the hypocrisy of the system itself doing contrary to everything that they said was the problem. I mean, it's like even these protesters that go out there to protest and save the environment, you know, or they're talking about climate change, but yet they're still driving around, riding around in cars and buses. And, you know, if you really believe that CO2 is actually causing this much damage, you know, get together with your friends and ride in a rickshaw or a bicycle or something like that. You know, reduce your carbon footprint for real, not get on a big bus or a corporate jet and fly clear across to some convention where other people got a whole entire parking lot full of cars that they all rode there. You know, they want the technology, they want the leather jacket, but they also want everybody to believe that they're a vegetarian as well. So, it's...
Well, the authorities don't want you to think for yourself. They want you to believe what they're saying and get angry and point fingers.
That's it.
So that's really what mostly people are doing. So, but again, pay attention to your internal experience. Are you feeling something's wrong, but you can't identify it? Are you having some overwhelming longing for something, but you don't know what that is? You can't identify it. Do you feel like you're searching for something? Something isn't quite right. You have to pay attention to those signals, because something is speaking to you, actually displaying that there's something quite wrong. It is up to us individually and collectively to then explore what possibly might be wrong. Why are we feeling disharmonious? Why are we feeling out of sorts? Why are we not experiencing inner peace? That's
well,
a big
one.
There
you go. Inside me, I got this, like, this scale of justice thing that feels like it has to balance out all the time, and when things aren't balanced and they're not fair, you know, I try to remedy it by, you know, helping somebody or whatever. But, you know, I don't get why I do, but I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are being subjected to imprints that are activating their emotions. And like I wrote in my, you know, there on the, that I read earlier on the Facebook, that our emotions are being pushed and brought out to the surface, and you have no critical thinking when you are experiencing these levels of emotion. There's no critical thinking there, because you basically are outside yourself. You're outside of your true nature, and you've basically disconnected from the source of what I'm still going to call the truth meter, which is dead or dulled.
Well, even in the science community, in alternative energy, people will flat out sit there and argue with each other over a theory, you know? Theoretical is basically that. It's what you believe that is going on. I mean, from your observation, this is what we believe is happening. It's still, at this point in the game, it's still a theory. But yet they will argue and degrade each other to the extreme, because, you know, this your words don't match what this theory said. Well, where did the theory come from to begin with? How was you taught that? You all this information that you was given, you know, through school or whatever. And so you know, to actually get down and find the truth means you got to actually do some real research and some real science in order to find out, you know, is this theory...
Well, you have to take responsibility for wanting to do that. Or you could just hang out there and argue.
Otherwise, you'll just believe anything that anyone says to you because it sounds intelligent, because it sounds
because they're the authorities, and you believe that you don't have authority. You believe that you're less than because you've been told that you're less than. You've been told and programmed to believe in the authorities, to believe in the scientists, believe in the politicians, believe in the doctor, believe in the pharmaceutical company, believe in the TV guy talking to you, the politician, the priest, the banker.
That's why mad science is mad science, because mad science is real science, and it's pointing out the hypocrisy of what... Don't tell me the world's coming to an end and not expect me to try to put out a solution using what I've learned from science all these years, and suddenly you're telling me something contrary to what's going on. I honestly believe there's a solution for every problem under the sun, including what we're talking about here today, about how these people are, you know, basically using mind control. When you say the word mind control, you're already trained that that's a conspiracy theory. That's a tinfoil hat wearing deal. So they put a seed of doubt in with every bit of truth in order to try to make people question anything that you're saying. That's why we always find ourselves having to constantly say, don't believe what we're saying. Go out and do your own research. That's the whole key. It's your life. You are the one responsible for your journey that you're on. And you can't just follow blindly and trust that the person beside you is giving you the right information or not. This is the world that we find ourselves in today. And a lot of people are struggling with it. And so we need to figure out some way to, you know, get them to be able to, you know, find some sort of balance in their life. You see what I'm saying? I mean, I don't have the answers. I don't think anybody has the answers. But...
Well, we're exploring answers.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
I mean, what my answer for myself may not be the answer for you, but I'm not stagnant, okay? I'm searching. I'm seeking. This is what I want to do. This is my nature, but we all have that nature. That's called the fundamental nature. To explore things, to be courageous and explore and to seek out what feels to us the truth, you know, by assigning our truth meter, activating that. But so belief, talking about belief, I mean, a person's belief is very strong. And, of course, what we believe in, we also are creating or co-creating through our beliefs.
Yeah.
And this is very important to identify the fact of how powerful a belief is. I feel very strongly that we are affecting things, many things, if not all things, through what we believe in, because that's a frequency, it's a power, it's an emotion, and it's words and thought. And what we believe in, we are manifesting and creating and calling upon to align ourselves with.
Yeah.
And to get to that realization, you know, may be a leap for some, but it's like what we focus on, we manifest. What we believe in is a power. Our words are powerful. Our thoughts and emotions are powerful. And when we are being flung around and indoctrinated with what to believe and what to feel and how to act, we are not in our true nature. That is not ourself. Now, I'm not saying that you can't make a judgment. You should make a judgment. Does this feel right to me? Or am I just following, you know, the sheep? Am I just following authority? We have to discern. Now, you may... What I'm saying here is you be your own person, okay? The indoctrination of ourselves as following the rule or the authorities and the herd is quite huge.
It's so also dangerous because the way that...
Well, it's dangerous, but we have to step... I'm going to point out again, if you feel unsettled, if you feel something inside of yourself, you're questioning things and you're feeling something's not right, these are signals that you have to pay attention to. So therefore, that means you have to step away and outside in order to get more information.
Yep.
You have to detach and disconnect from, I guess, you know, maybe the system, maybe the technology, maybe from others even. If others around you are pushing hatred and vitriol and carrying on and raging about others and so on, step away from that for a while. Feel that out, if that is right for you as a human being. You have a right to question, is this my own true nature, or am I being led by others to believe in something when I'm not even sure?
Yeah.
So we have to take that responsibility, that's all I'm saying.
Well, I think that to some extent that the way that people actually create in their own reality, you know, basically self-fulfilled prophecies, you know, the power of the spoken word is powerful. I mean, you can formulate the right words and you can raise somebody up to the highest reaches of heaven, or you can drop them down to the lowest, darkest abyss just with the words coming out of your mouth. So that ought to be a warning sign to begin with of, you know, how you can actually affect not just your reality but everyone else down along the line. Well, they're using this power against us. They're using the power, you know, like what you see, you know, they're using that against us. When I say they, I'm talking about the power structure that is, you know, the mainstream media and even our elected representation. That's, you know, part of them's out there saying crazy stuff like, you know, there ain't going to be no peace until we have power, or go out and get in their face and that kind of stuff, promoting violence. And, you know, you see all these stories on there, and even when the Supreme Court comes out and says it's okay to propagandize your own people, you know, that's basically, they just said it's okay to lie to everybody. It's okay for the law enforcement man to lie to you to get you to give him evidence, where when you go to court, his word is hearsay, or your word is hearsay, but his word is evidence. Because of the uniform that he wears, his word is stronger than yours in court. So, you see what I'm saying here? This is what the people out there are up against, and if they don't understand that they themselves have true power themselves just by the words coming out of their mouth, and by the knowledge that they put in their head about understanding and being able to, whenever your body or your heart, your spirit tells you that something's wrong, to be able to recognize that and step away from it, get back and look and see what's really going on before you react the way that they expect you to react. You know, if they go out to, they want to start a riot, it's so easy to start a riot these days, it ain't even funny. I mean, the college, the way that they're in, some of the professors are indoctrinating the kids in college, you know, getting them to believe in all these different things, and, you know, saying that, you know, this is, we got to get this world to go towards like a communist type of society. Communism, you know, the way that it might be explained might sound good, where everybody's equal, everybody has, you know, a house, they all have a job, everything is good, but it's always like the king is always living better than the peasants. You see what I mean? So, if you get what it is that you really want, or what you think you want, because of what they told you that this is what you want, because this is better for all of humanity, you know, the Georgia Guidestones, where it talks about depopulating the world, you know, who put that out there? Why? You know, there's almost, they say, 7 billion to 9 billion people on the planet, and how many of these people actually have to die in order to put the perfect world together according to their view of what the world should be? Does that make any doggone sense? Hello?
I just came back in. I don't know if you got my message. I thought we had another guest on.
Oh, yeah, Ted's here. I need to step out for a second. Hey, you guys got the steering wheel.
What's your perspective of what we're talking about?
My perspective on that is, like, I even take it to a level where when we put the leadership and putting aspects of potential they manifest themselves. Like, in a way, like, people have always used copper on their wrists for as long as I know, for like arthritis and things of that nature, wearing copper bracelets. Well, I think that over time, the humans have, our perception and our belief has created, and copper also having some type of a living entity that we don't understand as an atom, like, basically the more humans that have taken the belief in the copper helping, the stronger it becomes. So as we start believing things, they will start manifesting themselves in this reality. And then I also believe that connected directly to our beliefs, like the collective of the humans and the animals and the solar system, is like a direct representation of how the sun's energy is vibrating at this time. So when we see like fluctuations in the sun, we're really seeing fluctuations in either our planet or the other planets in the solar system and their beliefs in that. That's what I believe. That's my belief. I don't know if that's too far off, but it feels like it connects up a little bit. It's maybe a little bit extreme.
Well, I think it's quite interesting. On some level, I tend to agree with you about how much power we put into something collectively. Certainly, individually is a different level, but then you have collective mass of people putting copper bracelets on. So what I understand you saying is that that is actually manifesting what the people believe in the copper, because it's giving that copper energy.
Exactly.
I tend to believe that. That's what I'm talking about with our power. Our beliefs are very powerful. We create through our beliefs. We have more power than we ever really realized on that level.
Yeah, the one thing that kind of brought that to my mind was these ideas of tensor rings and using copper cut at ancient sacred measurements that they used to build old temples with, like the cubit, and different ratios of these holy numbers that have been used for, I would say, eons. And the idea that the copper, when cut to these certain lengths, carries a certain frequency. And as more and more people in this time are bringing back these ancient measurements, the frequency is becoming locked in stronger and stronger, because we're starting to believe in it again.
Well, I feel that I agree with you there. I call it sacred geometry. You're calling geometries have frequencies, and when they're put together in certain ways, in the sacred numbers or the golden rule, or I believe you're talking about, I equate that with ancient wisdom and how that affects the whole. When you use these sacred geometries, these systems that were quite amazing and extraordinary. So let's take the pyramids, for instance, and all the monolithic structures. I wrote a lot about this in one of my books. A lot of this information came to me through spiritual guidance. I'm not a scientist, and I don't really know too much about these things, but receiving this spiritual guidance, I was told that, and you can do the studies, because I found out later that in fact scientists and archaeologists and so on have actually done these studies, others have done these studies, and realized that these monolithic structures that were built eons ago are in alignment, geometrically wise, in alignment with the star systems, the cosmic realms, and also the grid on the earth, what we call the ley lines or the grid, or I call it the sacred web, because in our culture that's what we call it. But that they are aligned with through the grid, or we want to call it if you use the acupuncture system, and the body has various grids or lines of energy, and then there's a matrix point. That's where you put the needle in the matrix point. That needle, once it's in the matrix point, it activates what is called the chi through that line in your body, the direct line to the next matrix point where the next needle goes in. So you're activating between these two points, these two needles, a chi, which is the energy or the life force of the human body. You get what I mean, right?
Yes.
So if you take a pyramid, the Giza pyramids or any other monolithic structure, I was told that these are on high points of frequency energy upon the Earth, the natural point, which is called a telluric point, I guess. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. A telluric point means it is the highest point of natural energy upon the Earth. And these are throughout the whole of the grid or the whole of the web. And ancient people built these monolithic structures with all the sacred geometry or the golden rule in measurements on these telluric points. And then the next monolithic structure and the continuing on that alignment of the grid locked down on the next telluric point. So now you have a grid system upon the whole Earth that is consisting of monolithic structures that are in alignment. Like the pyramids are in alignment with Easter Island, those powerful structures there, and so on. It goes through the whole Earth. You can look that up. So the information that came to me about this was why that was done. Now, if you go back millennia in the beginning when all these things were put up, you have different cultures who placed monolithic structures, and we're talking Stonehenge, we're talking the pyramids, we're talking various other things along those lines that we know about. Ancient cultures, without any connection, plopped these huge monolithic structures that, you know, today they can't even lift some of those stones, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But those stones have a property, we call them singing stones in our way, singing stones. Stones that have a frequency when they are activated. So like the needle on the matrix point on your body, when you stick that needle and you're activating a frequency to down the course of your body to the next matrix point, and you're activating the chi, the life force. The word life force is very key for what I'm going to continue to describe. So when you put the pyramid here, okay, and another pyramid on the other side or another structure further on in the world, and they are all connected on the ley line or the grid, and you get people there at one pyramid and people at the other pyramid or other monolithic structure activating that structure. It activates its frequency. Now, that's done through ceremony. It's done through ritual. It may be done through touching the stones or hitting the stones. So you have the ringing or singing stones sending out frequencies of that property of those stones and the intention of the persons standing there at these structures doing this. That is sending the life force to the next pyramid, the next structure, and allowing the balance and the harmony and the life force of the Mother Earth to activate, to hold everything in harmony and balance. This actually relates to the prophecy given to me about the sacred hoop. Now, because we all were involved in feeding the sacred hoop and keeping the sacred hoop, which is a frequency throughout the whole of the Earth, by our connectedness to the Mother Earth and our relationship to Great Spirit or Creator or whomever you want to say, by the belief that we all had, by that connectedness that we realized that we were one with, and therefore we activated these frequencies through these structures, these monolithic structures, for the whole, the good of the whole. Are you with me so far?
Well, I got a question while we're at, can you think of for what purpose that anybody would want to hide that kind of knowledge or history from all the people?
Well, of course. I've probably
got the same exact answer in my head that you do. But
go ahead.
It's basically all boils down to, you know, control. People don't want you to know, you know, things of your past. They don't want you to know, you know, even where you came from or what power.
They don't want you to know the power that we really truly have and the ancient wisdom that we were all given that has been basically usurped by them. You know, so, I mean, you have these structures now that are tourist sites. You have trash there, or people just ignore them, or people have taken them down or knocked them down. So the grid has been corrupted. The web has been corrupted, okay? And the people who knew about this, of how to activate the life force of the Mother Earth and the whole of the cosmic realm, because it's all connected, what is above so below, basically were destroyed, genocided, or taken out, or told that you're devil worshippers, or you can't do that anymore, you can't pray over there, you can't go here, or, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it. It makes a lot of sense, too. I mean, you know, just to see, we've already explained how there is a control structure out there that manipulates people by dividing them, you know, amongst, you know, color or race or sexual orientation or whatever, while at the same exact time, what they're telling you, you need to be accepting of people and be nice to people and not commit hate crimes or anything like that. But at the same exact time, the same exact system, the same media outlets, the same entertainment industry, the same businesses promote the completely opposite side of the spectrum.
Completely opposite.
And glorify
it. It's a negative energy that is being pushed throughout the whole of the web.
Yeah.
Because we're all part of the web. So you have to ask, who is it that would want to take this wisdom from the people, from the nations, that we could actually heal the earth, create the life force and harmony and balance, not only within ourselves, but with each other and all of life?
Well, in my belief system, I would call him the devil. It's like Paul Harvey says, if I was the devil, this is how
I agree.
I'd get.
So, because you know why? Because to me, it's evil. Because this is terrible.
Yeah.
To me, it's destroying the sacredness of everything. But I'll give you an example. You know the church in it just went out of my head. The big cathedral there in Europe. Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Okay, so take Notre Dame. Now, the history of Notre Dame basically is, beneath Notre Dame is one of the most ancient, powerful, telluric points upon the earth that the ancient people would go to pray, to honor, do ceremony, whatever it was that they did, the great sacred mother. And these are the words of the ancient people. Who comes along and plops a giant cathedral on top, you know, Notre Dame, on top of that high telluric point that was so crucial to the whole of the web on the earth, of the grid on the earth? Who came along and plopped that down there?
Well, yeah, and why also do all the elitists of the world seem to find it necessary to go visit the pyramids in Giza and places like that, you know? Sure,
I think the pyramids, here's my perception. I don't know if you know about Anthony West, but he's done a lot of, he's pretty controversial there because he and some other of his colleagues had determined that the Sphinx is much older and was in a water system due to the erosion of the Sphinx, area of the Sphinx. But also, there are other people who have done studies and realized that the pyramids are in alignment 10,000 years ago with Orion's belt.
Yeah.
Now, that is exact. Now, so we're talking 10,000 years ago, but the Egyptologists claim that that was Nefu or somebody, Nefu's, I don't know, tomb, and it was built 6,000 years ago, right? So, okay, and that the lion, the Sphinx, is in alignment with Leo, not today, but over 10,000 years ago. So you have... go back that far. So, okay, so you have the Sphinx is in alignment with Leo, the constellation Leo, and the Giza, the pyramids, are in alignment with Orion's belt, exact alignment, and they are built with exact degrees, as every other pyramid, exact degrees and sacred numbers and so on and so forth, as you were speaking about. How do cultures all over the world in ancient times do that? Something else was going on big time way, way back where this ancient wisdom and knowledge appeared, so that you have cultures so far back, primitive stone-wielding, grunting people, yeah. who built these monolithic structures all over the world that even today they're finding more and more and more that they are unexplainable to scientists today on how on earth they did that.
Well, one of the biggest mysteries that kind of baffles me at this point is, I don't know if you ever looked into the Antarctic Treaty, but it's like 12 separate nations back in the 1950s signed a treaty, and basically it's like a big giant reserve now. Keep in mind, that's supposed to be a frozen wasteland out there. What is so important down there that all these nations had to come together to, you know, sign this treaty to keep people from going there? You can't just go down there to visit. You know, you got to have special
permits. Well, you also have a lot of incidences where certain people went there, and like that explorer, what was his name, who wrote up stuff about discovering things there.
Well, Admiral Byrd went down there.
Admiral Byrd. His diaries were mind-blowing. And then you have Kerry recently, when Obama was in, took a trip up there. It was like a hidden, you know, sort of secret. And I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going up there. Then there's theories about, yeah, pyramids there and underground cities and even ETs chained there, the Nephilim waiting to come back. I mean, what do you think on all that?
Well, in my mind, I mean, like, you don't sign a treaty with 12 separate nations that there's not something down there of, you know, value
to
or
keep
something.
It hidden, right?
Something that you don't want people to know
well,
about.
Well, you have the nations are in collusion together, because we're talking about the deep state people in these nations who know things technology-wise. Like now, well, I've had my personal experiences with ETs ever since I was a child, and other beings of the realms and the spiritual beings and the elemental beings, I've had my experiences with these. But of course, I would be tagged as a nutcase, or a conspiracy crazy person, wackadoodle. But
well,
so now recently, it is just so the government knows about the others. The government has been in collusion with the others from other realms. We are not alone. Now, this is going to come out because the Pope knows. The Pope basically said, I'm going to welcome the ETs.
He also
first.
Said something about baptizing them.
Yeah, baptizing them because he wants, yeah. So also Hillary Clinton, when she was running, spoke on a interview, and I thought this was fascinating. I thought, wow. She said that if this was when she was running against Obama, I think she said, or maybe it was Trump, I don't know, I think it was Obama. She said, if I'm elected, I will disclose everything about Area 54 and the cover up of the, you know, the ET whatevers. And I thought, wow, so you have a politician saying these things for the first time. She's going to disclose. Fascinating, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think, Ted?
I'm sorry. I was zoned out in a minute first, so I apologize.
All right.
Well, either way, you know, the mere fact that these folks, you know, 12 separate nations come together and sign this treaty and basically makes it off limits for people to go down there, that leaves the whole mystery up to speculation. What's actually down there? What are they hiding and stuff like that? That could be another layer on, you know, all this, you know, how they hide history from you or rewrite history or why they wouldn't want you to know who you really were, your true power, or anything like that. This world that we live in is just like, It's mind-blowing. And in one sense, it's kind of exciting because it's, like, mysterious and there's adventure and, you know, trying to find everything. But on the other hand, you know, after being told that the world is in a certain state of affairs and that there's wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famines and pestilence, and you're trying to, like, you know, can't we all just get along and let's help save each other and let's make the world a better place, and you're up against all this constant grind. It's not just to the information that's coming to us directly, but it's also information that's being taught to kids in school, that they're coming out of school with a certain mindset that the authority knew all the answers, and so whatever you say is going to go in this ear and out the other. And it's quite literally, sometimes when I talk to people, you know, younger than me, and I start talking anything scientific or that kind of deal, I literally feel like that they're about to have a seizure. Their eyes roll back in their head like, oh, whoa, you're just talking, you know, you're blowing my mind, I can't concentrate or something like that, which you would think that they would really want to learn everything they could from their elders, you know. They'd want to question things and experience life. You see what I'm trying to say here? But it's not like that. They got one view, and that's what was told to them. And if you question that belief system or that, you know, science or anything, they can't take it. They get mad. They get angry. You can't know. This is what the teacher said. My teacher said global warming was real, you know. I believe her. I don't believe you. And you sit there telling the science, and it doesn't matter how you explain it to them. Everything scientific, the way the book explains it, you know, the way that the molecules are made and the weights of them, their atomic weight or whatever, and you explain it to them as simple as possible, and they still can't get past, no, we got to save the planet. You see what I mean? That's what you're up against.
No, it gets deeper than that. I want to speak on this, because I was at this wedding, and like the other people in the wedding, maybe from like up in New Jersey or something, and they come down in, and the one guy's like engineer, and we're sitting there and talking, and I'm like talking about some science things and whatnot. And so I hit him with the heavy, and he looked over at me, he's like, man, he's like, I can't handle this. And like what you're saying, he just started like, you know, I mean, shut down, complete shutdown.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's like, you know, it's the weekend, bro. I'm like, we're at a wedding. I'm like, bro, it's the weekend. It's like, why not this weekend to fix everything up? You know what I mean? It's like, you can't take time off. My grandpa never took no time off. He don't know what a weekend is. If you told him what a weekend is, he'd slap you probably. Like, well, you know, I just didn't get it. But then I felt it right there. I was like, well, this is it. I was like, we're real close, me and him. It was just, we're real close at the moment to getting to the heart of the real problem, and he just shut down. And yeah. He's like, I just need to party and drink more beer, bro.
Well, I don't. And I'm like, that's why most people, they work hard all week long, and by the time it gets home, that's it, you know, and whatever they hear on the news, that it's almost like that guy in the movie The Matrix that said, he wanted to be put back in the Matrix for basically betraying all his few friends, his human friends. All he wanted was to be put back in the Matrix, to be wealthy, and not to remember anything. It's like that moment you wake up after you go down a rabbit hole and you start looking at all these conspiracies. There's things that you wish you never even heard of. You know, like 9/11, and they were talking about people jumping out the window because they didn't want to burn to death in the towers, and the way the towers came down. And anyone with any kind of critical thinking and scientific type of mind, with any engineering, you know, in their education background or whatever, wasn't allowed to question anything that happened in that scenario. You had to take the mainstream story every single time. It don't matter what happens in this world. You have to believe what the mainstream story is. You can't be the one that stands outside the box and say, you know, hold on, I don't believe this. This isn't right, you know. You see what I mean? And that's the kind of mentality that is so prevalent in today's society. Most people, they don't want to know. They don't want to question anything. They just want to go through life and just live life, not knowing anything. And when you try it, when they do come to you and they say that there's a problem in the world, and then you try to explain to them a solution, they will give you all these reasons why you can't do that. Every excuse under the sun. You know, and even if you reach out and try to talk to leaders of the world and try to, you know, give them an idea for a solution, they will never take it from you. They'll only take it from the mainstream science. If you don't have that piece of paper or that notoriety, that authoritarian connection, so to speak.
Well, you haven't paid all that money to them for the piece of paper that gives you the right to say I'm an authority.
That's it.
But here's what we're up against, what you just said. And also, what Ted said was, I can't deal with this. I just need to go party and drink more beer. And what we're up against is the people's inability to believe in all possibilities.
Yep, that's it.
We are up against that particular mainstream imprint of it's too good to be true, that never going to happen, don't get your hopes up too high. These are all across the board imprints that we have all been, you know, set up with, these kinds of beliefs. Well, it's too good to be true. Nah, it's never going to happen. Or we'll never have peace. Or we'll never have, you know, unity or whatever. So you have this power of these types of beliefs that are throwing the wrench in the works that I'm going to say, or maybe those that are working to activate positiveness, to activate peace, to activate something good. Our words and our...
Sorry, I was coughing.
Sometimes we realize that we are participating in those types of things by saying, well, they're never going to believe me. All right, they're not going to believe me because I don't have a paper. I didn't pay money for the authority. Therefore, forget that. Nobody's going to believe me. So we've just thrown the works into the dream vision of being believed for the good of the whole. What you were doing, we participate in a way that we don't realize is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get it. But it's like whenever you've been pretty much gone through an entire lifetime almost of times while you're in school, like the first, 12 years, you go to from kindergarten or maybe even preschool all the way through to high school and then maybe even possibly on to college, and you're told certain things and then the society seems to go contrary to what you're told, or... You know, these don't make any sense anymore. But that is hard for your average Joe to be able to shake. And if it questions any of the education that they got, they'll fight tooth and nail. Even if they're completely and 100% wrong, they will still argue with you over it. They'll still fight with you about it. And that's why I always talk about stepping outside the box, because I want both sides of the story. I want all information on the table. I want to know the true history of the world. I want to know the true, you know, the truth about everything. You know, they're constantly telling me I couldn't handle the truth is basically what they're saying.
Well, that's an imprint.
Yeah.
So another imprint is like, Gaz just put in the chat, this is Bush, President Bush, doesn't matter which one, it's an authority. A person who's risen to authority position who said, we shall not tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories. So, but that's their perception, telling the people of what an outrageous conspiracy theory is. So they have designated, basically, what those conspiracy theories are, and the people will believe them. Well, because they are authorities.
But since they're in a position of authority, most people are going to trust them. But that also gives them almost a get out of jail free card, because they could do whatever they want to you and say anybody who says any different than what you just witnessed, then they're a conspiracy theory. You see what I mean?
Well, there's too many people playing God.
Yeah.
In my estimation.
Well, they even said that one day that science, they will be gods. You know?
Well, that scientist spoke it on a video. He said it. We are going to be gods, and you cannot stop us.
Yep.
And these are some scientists who are messing around with nature that they shouldn't be messing around with creation, but they want to be gods.
Yep.
And all these other people who are claiming authority also have that indoctrination. They are the gods. They are the authorities. They have the ownership of everything and everyone. And we are basically the peons. So I call them the kings and the queens, and we're just the serfs down here.
Yeah, but the way I see it is we the people actually have the true power if we ever chose to use it. That's what I think they fear the most, is the fact that they got to keep us divided. And when I say they, I mean those folks at the top, the money men that want to keep on making money and, you know, basically having us do their bidding. Because, you know, if you're a lousy king and everybody decides they don't want to be your servant anymore, you're not going to fare so well as king anymore. You're not going to be able to get them to do your deeds for you. And that's why
I'm going to play the devil's advocate here, because I believe what you just said. We the people are the ones who have the power if we ever come together and get it straight. But people will hear you say that and they'll say, I don't have any power. Because they were indoctrinated to believe that.
Yeah. And that's why one of the reasons why even in the medical industry, a lot of places are going back to faith-based, where they talk about prayer and healing and stuff like that, because your mind is really powerful. If you believe yourself to be sick, there's actually people out there who make themselves physically sick just because they think they got a germ on them or something, and their mind, it's the belief in their mind is so strong that they actually physically make themselves sick. And there's even been scientific studies about, you know, the placebo effect, to where they'll give some people real medicine and they'll give other people a sugar pill. And people that had taken the sugar pill believing that they had the real medicine actually healed. Now, how is that? If you didn't have, if you didn't have the real medicine that they were talking about, the only possible way is that your mind, you know, basically healed your body. So that in itself is a power. Look, I'm not sitting here trying to say we're all gods or anything like that, but I'm saying that you're not even remotely as weak as you've been, you know, put out to believe. If you think you have to constantly have somebody there to protect you and watch for your safety and do all this kind of stuff, you know, or give you the answers every time you've got a question or something you need, and you can't even be self-reliant. You know, you can't even believe in yourself enough to even try to excel. You won't. Henry Ford said it. He said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. That's how powerful your mind is.
Well, even though today you might see little snippets or information about this new trend of doctors accepting the realization or truths about if you give a patient headphones or put a tape on of positive energy or positive words or music, soothing music or whatever, that it helps them during the operation and it helps their healing and their recovery. So you see that. You say, wow, they're shifting. The doctors are changing. Well, I'm going to say that they are not, because they will not lose their positions. The medical profession will not lose their position with radiating people and you know, zapping people with chemotherapy. They might let you bring in somebody who's going to sit there and chant for you, or, you know, a headphone with music saying, I am healthy, I am healed. They'll allow that now. But they're not going to give up their position. As long as you go through their system of chemotherapy, radiation, or whatever it is, sure, they'll let you have a tape. Sure, they'll let you sit there and meditate and whatever. You know, I'm just showing you the differences. If it appears that they're shifting to some degree, they're not.
Yeah.
They're just giving you a little, because too many people are now saying, wait a second, this really works. So now they start to get a little concerned and nervous because, oh, wait, that means that people are going to go into self-healing or, you know, whatevers or alternatives.
Yeah, it's like that oxygen therapy. That oxygen therapy, from everything that I've been taught scientifically, that oxygen therapy is like a miracle. I mean, it does so much if you understand the chemistry of the body, you know, and how the hyperbaric oxygen chamber works. You know, it's getting oxygen down to places where, you know, it needs to get to promote healing and get your stem cells, energized and all that. But instead of using that to fight cancers or anything like that, they still want to radiate somebody and destroy their immune system. And how do you how you do damage to heal somebody, I'll never understand that, you know, or go directly to amputation as opposed to at least trying every single option available in order to save a person's leg, to give them a good quality of life. And I've witnessed this personally with a family member that's going through an issue like that. But they won't even go through that oxygen treatment because it scares them. They don't understand it. The doctor won't say, you know, hey, you should try this out. You know, we tried everything else. It failed. This is another option. You should try it out, and this is how it works. But because they want to keep their position in the hospital, and because of insurance regulations and hospital regulations and all that, they won't even talk to their patients about the other possibilities, alternative medicines and such. So, you know, there's a lot of people being butchered in hospitals needlessly. You know, and I don't get it. I mean, I do, but I don't, because it's all financial. You don't want to tell somebody there's a free cure for a common cold if you're trying to sell them cold medicine. The same thing in our energy, deal. The energy industry, you don't want everybody knowing that you can use water as fuel, even though science says it is. It's hydrogen and oxygen, you know. But, you know, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep on shouting from outside the box. I'm going to keep on, I think these shows that we do, if more people got together and just kind of, you know, sorted through everything, like we're talking, you know, having conversations about everything and even past, societies and things that they believed in, I think these are a plus to open people's mind to possibilities. Especially in this day and age, whenever you got the system basically mentally tormenting the world with everything that has to do with fear or hate or, you know, labeling everybody. Everybody's got a label these days, you know, and it's ridiculousness when we're all supposed to be like family, you know. No matter which version you look at, if we're all on the same boat together. And even if you believe we evolved from little squiggly things in the water all the way to what we are now, we still a family on the same exact earth, the same exact nature, the same exact boat. And if we don't figure out a way to get our act together, we'll basically fulfill a self-fulfilled prophecy of destroying ourselves. And, you know, some people even believe that there were other societies prior to us that did just that. They got so technologically advanced and warred themselves into non-existence. And if that's the case, if somebody in the past did that, we're going to just keep on repeating the same cycle over, and humanity could never reach its full, total enlightenment if we don't get our act together. You know what I'm...
Can I jump in on that idea? It's like, this is really reminding me of watching Kanye West up in the Trump office the other day.
Yeah.
And how he's like, they're trying to get this 68-year-old black man freed from jail, asking the Trump to pardon him, basically. And he's like, because, you know, and then he just jumps into it. He's like, because I believe in the multiverse, so, you know, in some other lifetime, I am this guy in jail. And I am here in this lifetime to get him out of jail, which is to get myself out of jail in the multiverse. Wow. And I was like, oh wow. I was like, I've never heard anybody acknowledge the All One, like, in the Oval Office like that before. It was crazy. I mean, it's definitely an interview or like a little sit down worth watching, I think.
Yeah.
It's pretty loopy. Right?
Yeah, well, that's what we're told.
I mean, it was pretty loopy. I watched and I was like, whoa, that's. Wow.
That's what I'm looking for. That's the evidences that I'm looking for, that yes, we don't need to be frustrated. The people are enlightening one way or another. Is there going to be backlash? All we can do is not react if there is. We're just going to enlighten and be in peace. And that's what I'm seeing right there in the Oval Office.
Well, me personally, I think I'm pretty well, I think I'm going to be just fine. It's just my concern goes out to other people that might you know, as we say, like just waking up or something like that, or not waking up, or just kind of freaking out on life because, you know, everybody's constantly living in fear. I mean, where this whole journey started for me, as crazy as this sounds, was back in 98, somewhere around about, whenever they was doing the Clinton impeachment trials. And, you know, I used to, basically, I considered myself a Democrat back in the day, and I liked Bill Clinton. He seemed like a pretty good president at the time. Things seemed to be, you know, all right. I didn't really know a lot about politics. But as they were trying to impeach this guy, you know, for what they said he did in the White House, then I got to listening to news and scanning around different channels, and I stumbled on Alex Jones, and he started telling all these different stories about secret societies and all this, and so I got to going down the rabbit hole, looking deeper and deeper, and heck, man, I sat there and I read the Book of Revelations, and I'm matching that with what I've seen, you know, what Alex is talking about, and what I'm seeing going on in society and the news. Keep in mind, this is way before I heard Paul Harvey's deal in 1965, but I got myself worked up into a frenzy where I was like, you know, a super prepper. You know, I'm getting ready for the apocalypse. I'm moving my family out to the country, and I'm staying away. You know, I'm going to try to keep my family safe because I honestly believed at the time that, you know, all heck was going to break loose, and they were coming around to round my family up and, you know, try to hurt us. And it took a long time for me to wind down from all that, and I don't think I ever completely got over it because I'm still questioning everything. I'm still, you know, looking with a skeptical eye towards the government, and even things that, you know, issues that pop up, you know, with like when this judge was getting basically put into the Supreme Court or whatever, and the whole drama that played out on that, and even things that happened after that, videos that I saw after that, adding to the so-called conspiracy mystery or whatever. But if I felt like that, I can only imagine how many people out there in the world are going through the exact same thing. And so the only advice that I can really give them is to slow down, take a breath, step outside the box, and look at everything. Look at the big picture. That's that, you know, if it's getting so overwhelming, you need to step outside, not just the box, but go outside in the yard and just start hanging out with nature and stay away from all this craziness.
I'm going to say that they have come after your family.
Well,
they have come after all of us in a very subtle way, very, very incrementally subtle way that you don't even realize it. It wasn't as blatant as, but it may be coming to that soon. I don't know, but because we're talking about martial law, possible on the parameters here that we're looking at, perhaps martial law, because of where we're being dragged to, population is being dragged to, behaviors and so on, that there's going to have to be something. A reset of the government's happening, and how does that occur? What happens when you have martial law? What happens when you have a reset of the government that is being done incrementally now, basically behind the scenes? And, so to me, it's like incrementally they have been attacking us, and we've been unawares of it. Now we're awake, and now we're really aware of what's been going on, and now we have to stay tuned, stay awake, because we've discovered, and it's true, like Gaz reminds us, that they have to tell us. They have to tell us the truth. That's the cabal, the dark, has to tell us the truth, you know? It's called the clean hands doctrine. Well, that's what he calls it, the clean hands doctrine.
That's what makes that video series Jericho so disturbing, because to see who they were blaming, and actually at that, you know, after that time, the movie was, the series Jericho came out way before all the newscast of where they were talking about how they kept on pumping out there about North Korea nuclear, and that's who in that movie series, they blamed North Korea for something that was an inside job, kind of like the whole 9/11 conspiracy thing. You see what I'm saying? But that's what makes it so concerning, because if that was the clean hands thing where they're sitting there telling, this is what we're going to do to you, so, you know, you can't say we didn't warn you. That's
well, they don't say it outright.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And this is why they can do it so easily. Yeah, they're showing us it all, but people are going, oh, look at that movie. Wow, or that's a sci-fi movie, or that's a funny movie, or that's a series. Whatever it is, they don't see the hidden message, the truth, in what we're being shown through Hollywood and books and political, you know, rhetoric and all that. People don't have that discerning tool. There you are again. It's that discernment through frequency. A lie has a different energy, a different frequency. The truth has a different frequency. So when people look and listen, they see the mouth moving of the politician or whatever, but they don't really get what's behind the spoken word, what the hidden meaning is, because they don't have the discernment ability anymore. They're just believing in the authority.
Well, I'll tell you what, my radar's up, because I'll hear key terms and I'll be focused right in, see what it is that they're saying, you know. And then,
well, yeah, I mean, there's things that are happening, like a lot of suicides. By the way, there was another suicide hanging by doorknob recently.
How did that happen?
It's impossible.
Oh.
Really. And but so we're looking at these things because we were told to watch for suicides, because people in the elite realms, like Hollywood people or authors, book authors or journalist or whatever it is, people that are in that realm, that sphere of doing no good, are basically taking themselves out, you know, or they're being taken out because they know something, and this is what we're looking at. So yeah, you'd say, oh, that people in general would say, oh, that's really crazy, that person hung themselves on their bathroom doorknob with a scarf. And then 2 days later, oh, wait, there's another person who hung themselves in the bathroom on the doorknob with a scarf. And now there's like four of them, and this another one was just recently. Why the bathroom? I don't know, but there's a sign here that if you're not alert and aware, you wouldn't be suspicious of the fact that there are numerous people in the higher up echelons, the elite, that are suiciding themselves with scarves on the doorknob in the bathroom. And I'm not joking. This is real. So it's like,
this is crazy.
They're being basically taken out for a reason. You know, some people are jumping off cliffs while they shoot themselves, or, you know, some people shoot themselves in the back of the head and they call it a suicide, you know.
Well, meanwhile, on the other side of the world, you know, there's things playing out technological wise that it blows my doors off, like that CERN Hadron Collider there, where they're slamming you know, protons or whatever into each other, trying to find the so-called God particle, the Higgs boson or whatever. And I'm like, you know, when you think back about the atomic age and splitting the atom and you know, nuclear explosion, you have to question, is this something that they should actually be tampering around with, and what is their ultimate goal with? You realize how much money they spent on this deal and all the symbology that surrounds it, where they got that one, the Goddess Destroyer or something like that. I can't remember what the name of that doggone thing is out in front of there. But it's like a creepy evil associated with that, and the creepy evil associated with what's going on with the Vatican and what's going on in government. And man, if you step back and you look at the big picture, and I know a lot of people don't like biblical references and stuff like that because they've been, you know, told whatever, it was written by man or whatever. Nonetheless, supposedly written 2,000 years ago, even if it was only rewritten 400 years ago, it doesn't matter. It just what matters is, even if it was only 400 years ago, somebody defined the world that we're living in back then, just like Paul Harvey said in 1965, the way that this world was actually going. And there are metal detectors and drug sniffing dogs in the schools these days, just like he said. And they've legalized gambling in probably a lot of the different states. They've legalized a whole lot of things that at one point in history probably would have been considered to be immoral. And they keep pushing the envelope, so to speak, trying to see how far that they can push and what they can actually get people to accept. Does that make any sense to you guys, what I'm saying here? It's really... It really adds to the disturbingness, if that's a word, of our reality and what people are up against. And so this is why I think it's so important for people to understand there's only one you, all right? And you're not by any means weak. But if you don't use that part that is you, that piece of the puzzle that is you, there is no way that the entirety of humanity could ever reach the ultimate enlightenment, if there is such a thing. You know, every one of us got a gift, every one of us got a talent, a skill, and by ourselves we can do some pretty amazing things, but together we can do incredible things. And I'm saying, if our reality is this distorted, this messed up, and that people out there are basically, you know, manipulating us into hating each other and fighting with each other and going to war, you know, even to the extent of killing each other, you know, and then raising our children up in a situation to where, you know, you watch a cartoon and it glorifies the army man. I had a little nephew one time told me when he grows up he wants to be an army man, and I'm like, thinking in my mind, I didn't say it out there to him, you know, graphically or anything. I said, but do you really understand what that means to be an army man? What you have to do as an army man? You know, it's like, to them, it's heroes. It's the good guy and the bad guy. You know, the good guy goes out and fights against the bad guy. And that's what we were taught as far as patriotism goes. It's us against them. It's the Russians against the Americans, or the Chinese against the Americans, or the world against each other, whatever. We're being guided down the road to a path of sure destruction if we allow the elitists of this world, the ones that are manipulating our emotions and our minds in order to sell us products that they get us to go out and make. We're the ones building all this stuff that they're using against us. Our tax monies go into funding the militaries, so we're buying their weapons, and then they sucker us into using these weapons against each other. And if people on an individual level can't even have the power to believe in themselves, how can you inspire anyone else out there in the world to believe in themselves? If you listen to the simple words that I'm saying about how your words alone are a power unlike you can possibly imagine, how much power that you can have with what you say to people, that's power. Now imagine if you got 1,000 people saying the right thing at the right time to enough people out there to get that message across to everybody. You know, words, they can hurt. It's not like that old sticks and stones and words will never hurt you. That's not the truth. You can devastate somebody with the words coming out of your mouth. And so my hopes, by putting this show together and bringing this round table so that we can sit here and talk our way through things instead of fight our way through this world, and you listen to what we're saying, and some of this wisdom, it helps you and it helps to inspire you to go out and do the same, to build a round table in your neighborhood, your community. This is where your true power lies. And it's not in you, the individual, by yourself. It's you, the individual, inspiring others like yourself to get out there and make this world right. These people are running amok. They're doing whatever they want, and they're doing it at the expense of all of us. They're not the ones going out there fighting the battles. They're sending us into war. They're getting us to do the labor. They're getting us to make their weapons. They're getting us to make the machines that they use to make people even sicker while they're supposedly trying to heal them. And when somebody stops long enough and observes and pays attention to science and says, look, hey, there's another deal. You don't have to kill them with chemotherapy. You could use this oxygen over here. And nobody's listening. That's why you need to listen. That's why you need to use that power of your voice. And when something resonates true in your heart, you need to share it. And it's not just what you can say that is your power. It's what you can do. Your body, I mean, look at yourself. You're amazing. You are, in my view, our Creator was the best artist, the best mechanic, the best of the best. I mean, I give all the glory to God, because when I look at what the human body is capable of, and the human mind, the things that you could actually do if you was ever to be able to reach your full potential, if each and every one of you was to do that together, there wouldn't be these conversations like we're having out here, because these folks wouldn't get by with the things that they do to us on a regular basis. They know your heart, and they know how to push your buttons. They know your mind, and they know how to get you to think in a certain way. It's going to either make you hate somebody because of their color, or make you want to fight with somebody because of your fear. Somebody tell me where I'm wrong. You know?
Oh, that was good. I like that. I like that, Shaziz.
Well, I hope that those words inspire somebody.
That was the best read ever. I'm gonna record that. I'm going to soundbite that one. Sound clip.
Well, folks, it's that time again. It's down to time where we got to go around the table. But, you know, I'm always hopeful and inspired every time we gather together. You know, the words that we talk about, we got to talk about some tough subjects, but I know there's solutions out there to every single problem under the sun. And there's only one way that these solutions ever get implemented. You can't rely on people that are there supposedly to represent you, that seem to come out of the White House or the Congress or the Senates or the parliaments, that come out wealthier than they were when they went in. And you don't see that the human condition, and I'm not just talking about your neighborhood, and I'm not just talking about your cities, your states, your countries. I'm talking about all people of this world. Because what we're told is there's suffering going on everywhere. And the only ones that can fix it is us. Because they've had the millions, they've had the money, they've had the resources, they've had the power all these years. For how many decades, you know, from the founding of the United States alone, they've had, the kings and queens have had all the money and all the resources available. And if they really had a pure heart and they wanted to make this world a better place, they wouldn't be out starting wars. Instead, they'd be out there starting a campfire and cooking some food for some people that are, you know, hungry, or building a house for somebody. You think of all the millions and billions of dollars that we've handed over to the system, and they still haven't resolved homelessness and hunger in this world. We don't have to live in a communist society, but we can live in a society where we care enough about each other to ensure that people's needs are met. There are people out there doing that. There's organizations out there that help feed the hungry. But they're not worldwide yet. And until we get them worldwide, until we get, instead of sending it down the pipeline, we actually take our technology and go in there and hand it to them directly. Hey, here's some food, here's a blanket, here's some clothes. We got that capability. My question is, why aren't we? Why aren't they the ones that we call leaders? So with that said, Barb, you got any words of wisdom before we get out of here?
Well, you know, as always, it's great to be here, you know, with you, Shaziz, and being able to share some ideas and thoughts and perspectives and, you know, go a little deeper, I guess, dig a little deeper into some form of awareness here. I always appreciate it. And look forward to it. So thank you for that. And I want to thank everyone also for tuning in and listening and for participating in the chat. It's really great to, when you do that. I love it. And, I think that, you know me, I always say I have a faith and a great hope for all things in to come, to return into harmony and balance, and I guess I have that trust. So I don't experience fear, and I don't. I guess I'm working on this new revelation here about throwing the wrench into the works, which sometimes we're not aware of. And this was a really key piece for me recently. Being unaware of how we corrupt something positive without really realizing it, by saying the opposite of what we just completed saying. Like, if we're saying something's really good, well, I see something happening that is really good. Something is unfolding, and it's a good thing. But then the next breath, I might say, well, but it seems too good to be true. Is it really real? Could that possibly be? And that's right there is the conundrum that is an energy that is corrupting and disrupting what I just put out that I saw and believe is true, is positive and good.
Yep.
And how how we are basically activated, that doubter, that doubt energy, that negative energy is activated whenever we say something positive.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't
or
like
hopeful.
That.
Now it can be, it can come from other people, it's not that. It's almost like we don't realize it. It's almost like a knee-jerk reaction because we grow up hearing, and at least I did, well, don't be so sure of yourself.
Yeah.
Well, or don't get your hopes up high. Or that's impossible. Or, you know, if you don't expect too much. I mean, these are statements that I feel are across the board are imprints to really negate any possibility of something really good occurring, because we're told don't expect, you know, don't have too much expectations, don't get your hopes up too high. And you see, so I became aware of that on a deeper level recently, and so I just wanted to share that again, because it's like, so I do believe in the power of words, and I do believe in the power of prayer. I do believe, I've seen miracles, I've experienced miracles, I do believe in them, and I do believe in our thoughts, our words, and our emotions have a power, either for positive or negative. And if you're putting out some positive information, there might be a little, you know, sort of like a little one of those imprints pop up that says, well, that's not really true, or that could never happen, or don't get your hopes up too high. It's too perfect. I'm just saying. So I wanted to share that with you because it was a whole insight and a big light bulb going on. And the realization I want to impress upon, I guess, the listeners is how powerful we really are. And I believe that there are all possibilities unless we disbelieve that there are all possibilities, then there will never be. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Well, that's awesome words of wisdom once again. I mean, I keep going back to what Henry Ford said. He said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And that's, man, you can't get more closer to the truth, because if you don't believe anything's possible, you're not going to try. And that's why I'm hoping that these words that we've all been sitting here sharing with everybody inspires people to believe in themselves. You know, like I say, if you want to find the miracle that you've been waiting for, go look in the mirror. It's that simple. You know, there's only one you. It's your life. My God didn't create any trash, only treasure. That means you're treasure. Every single one of you. Some of you might make some poor choices, but I figure, you know, you'll go down your road and you'll reap the rewards of whatever it is that you put out there on other people. It'll probably come back on you, kind of like that karma thing everybody keeps talking about. But if you want this world to be a better place, the first place to start is start with yourself and make yourself better. Make yourself strong and make yourself the best that you can make. And then that way your light is shining out there to the next person in line. They'll say, well, you know, how are you doing that? And you can guide them, you can help them out, you can make their world better. just by showing what you did, just by showing, you know, shining the light that is you, the real you, not that same dang thing that the dang mainstream media told you, you gotta look like this airbrushed picture, or you gotta look like, you know, this muscle man over on the side. I ain't what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the real you, the real spirit that's inside you, your true heart. That's the you. That's the you that you need to show the world. You are the miracle you're waiting for. So with that said, Ted, you got any words of wisdom before we get out of here?
You said you were on a roll today. I don't know what you ate before bed last night, but what it was wrecked. And, you know, I'll just say one thing. In my mind, you know, I do have appreciation, you know, for all this. And in my mind, you know, your sharing of the empowerment of people is really important. And, you know, for Barbara to acknowledge that we put ourselves down, like, we are our own worst enemy. That's why we take it out on everyone else around us.
Yep.
And so, you know, I feel in my heart, it's like really, what you said there a few minutes back where I said I wanted a soundbite is correct. Like, I want to re-listen to it because it was a little bit of a longer rant, but it was, like, perfect because you acknowledged so many aspects of how we can empower ourselves and how we can work together and all these different aspects. And to me, that's what it really sums up. Like, when we talk about power and mad science, you have such a big mind of the whole structure as a large apparatus and systems. And in this situation, having that large apparatus to look at the way we can actually treat ourselves better and the way we can help each other more is like, that's the end all goal. It's like, anybody can have electricity, but at the end of the day, if we're not nice to each other, if we're not helping each other, it's all in vain.
Yep.
So, you know, I really resonate with the whole idea that we will be the ones to create individually to create the change in our hearts. And I mean, that's the hardest thing to do. I think that's why sometimes I work on electric and other things, because, well, then you can avoid really working on the internal struggle. And the real struggle is what we're talking about here.
Yep.
And I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Barbara. You know, I just try to, I wish that there was a way that people could see through my mind's eye, the way that I see this world. You know, I wish you could just see it just once, and it'd make it easier. I try to formulate the right words of wisdom to try to explain to you what I'm seeing in my mind and what I'm feeling in my heart to try to make this world better. I honestly still do believe in the dream. I still believe it's possible. Until all of this stuff comes to a complete and utter halt, and there ain't no hope, it's all over, it's done, you know, I'm still going to be the one standing out there on the battlefield saying, can't we all just get along, and here's the solution to that problem over there. You know, if you're cold, put this coat on. Heck, I'll give you mine if need be. Whatever it takes. But I think that we as humans have such great potential that if we could ever come together and reach that ultimate potential enlightenment, or whatever you want to call it, that to go as far as a human family can go, I believe that this world that we create for ourselves after that would be so amazing. We could quite literally bring about heaven on earth. I feel that in my heart. I feel that in my soul, that if we chose to do so, we could do just that, and there wouldn't be these things, people hungry in the world, going on. Anyway, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. If anything inspires you, you know, share the message with somebody. Do like Ted said, make a clip of your favorite one, listen to it, and share it with somebody who needs it.
And that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Old woman! Man! Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme to our quite something able. We're off and mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Terrible, always looking to seize the terrible and the knights of the round table.